already been introduced to each other. But for the sake of the members, as we start, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourselves. And good morning, everybody in the house. We are going to start with our meeting. It's the second day of our committee deliberations on the annual reports. You missed out yesterday, Honorable Ngcobo. We had a briefing from the Auditor General on the Science and Technology Department, which is going to be Science and Innovation now, and the entities that are reporting under the department. So you missed out a lot about what the Auditor General had to say, but there is a document from the AG. You can grab it and follow through what the issues are. So we're going to deal with four entities today. So we have to be very strict on how we utilize the time that we have today. So we are going to allocate 45 minutes for a presentation, and then another 45 minutes for a discussion, and then we go to the next entity, we do the same. The reason is because we have got a lot of entities under our portfolio. So if we were to deal with all of them, it's going to require us to be here for extended number of days, which we do not have. So we're going to take four from Science and Technology today, and then we'll be done with them. It's not all the entities. These are just the ones that we selected. And then next week, yes, we know that we're going to then have to deal with the higher education. So we've got an apology from the CEO. Well, first let's deal with the apology from the minister, which was read out yesterday. It was for yesterday and today. Today is a cabinet committee meeting. And then we've got an apology from the CEO of CSIR, who's not available. He's attending the meeting of the heads of RTOs for the G20 in Japan, which was arranged some time back. So cancelling was going to mean that there was going to be wasteful expenditure. I think the apology is in order. But next time, the CEO must know that every October we do the annual reports, and the entity must be here. We can excuse him for all the other periods, but October is annual report. Everybody should know that. Honorable Mkatshwe is going to arrive late. Oh, she's here. Oh, sorry, I didn't see you. And then Honorable Liabo, I suppose he's still a transport committee. Okay. Any other thing? Nothing. So the DA is still not here. We'll pardon them. We know the issues there they are dealing with. Yeah. Okay, let me hand over to yourself here.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let's start off with the introduction. My name is Thokozani Madjozi. I'm the chairperson of the board for the CSIR.
My name is Kungeka Njobe. I'm the group executive for business excellence and integration at the CSIR.
Good morning. My name is Motori Masurumule. I'm the divisional group executive in charge of mining, manufacturing, defense and security.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Committee members. My name is Cheryl Howell. I'm the acting CFO.
Good morning. I'm Andile Mabindisa, the acting group executive for human capital.
So who's acting as a CEO today? You are, okay. Should have introduced yourself.
Apologies, Chair.
All right.
Okay, Chair, we will then go straight to the presentation. Mm-hmm. I will give the overarching view of the organization and then also the annual report, the contents of the annual report, and then I'll then hand over to the executives to take us through the presentation. So on the first slide, I think all of us can see the the first slides, and I think the way handouts may be given to everyone. We all know the CSIR, by the way. We are the largest multidisciplinary research council on the continent, and CSIR plays a very, very key role in the national system of innovation. We are currently in the process of repositioning ourselves to focus more on industry, which is basically informed by our new strategy. You would recall that over the past few years, CSIR has been perceived as an institution that is very much scientific in terms of research, where we're seen not to have taken our research and technology to where it matters most. This is commercialization and ultimately talking directly to what our mandate enjoins us to do. So we've decided that we will now try and close that gap. We are still a scientific research council, so there will still be fundamental research in the organization, but we will also be focusing on supporting industry. And then this new strategic trajectory that we've taken now basically means that we have to respond timelessly to industrial needs, which might require of us to be very agile compared to the past. So we'll have to be on our toes now, working closely with industry. We also are enhancing our collaboration, mainly with government, but also with the private sector, through offering solutions that will ultimately create jobs and growth of our economy. If you look at our revenue, roughly speaking, is split in a 70-30 kind of split, where 70% is coming from contract research, and 30% is parliamentary grant. Of that 70%, 80% almost comes from government. So we are working very, very strongly with government, and 20% comes from the private sector. So we feel that we can do a lot with the private sector to change that ratio and ultimately grow the organization, but also contribute significantly to the growth of the economy. It is a fact that the fourth industrial revolution is upon us, so we cannot run away from that. And, of course, that is impacting on the competitiveness of the organizations or partners that we work with. So we are positioning ourselves as well to play a very key role in that space by seizing the opportunities that the fourth industrial revolution is coming with. There are challenges that we are facing. I mean, the last two bullets, they talk to those challenges. The first one is really on the attrition of the human capital. We have a challenge of attracting new graduates, PhDs, and also retention of those graduates within the organization to a point where they become, say, chief scientists. And the reason for that is very simple. We have competitors within the national system of innovation. Most of them go to universities, but we also get some from universities. So we have to work a bit harder in ensuring that we create an environment that is attractive to this cohort in a manner that retains them for a lengthy period of time within the organization. So that is going to be going on for a while. We know that even universities, I'm also involved at a university, I'm at Wits University. I'm aware that this is the challenge that everyone within the NSI is facing. It's a small space, and this is a high-end skills environment, so you have to work a bit harder to retain that cohort. The other challenge that we are really facing is on the economic side. We are facing a very steep economic challenge, not just the organization, but globally. And then we strongly believe that the legacy of solid government, governance that we have created in the past, and the strong science, engineering and technology will put us in very good stead towards the future. So we're going to build on that going forward. You'll see in the subsequent slides that we talk very strongly on this point, particularly on collaboration, because we strongly believe that there is a lot we can still do in collaboration. And also we talk very strongly about the localization of our of technologies, both developed in-house and those that we get from elsewhere. So I think at this stage I will just hand over to Ms. Kungela Njobe to take us through the overview of the organization.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. In giving this presentation on the annual report, I will share it with my colleagues. I will give an overview of the CSR. My colleagues, the group executive for HR, will talk to the objective around building and transforming human capital. And my colleague, Dr. Maseremule, next to myself, will talk to provide research highlights for the past year. And our acting CFO obviously will talk through the numbers, the finances. And I will also come back to talk to the infrastructure investment in the CSRR. As you may know by now, I know that this committee is relatively new. I'm not audible. Gosh, thank you. As you may know, I know that the committee is relatively new to this committee. CSR is a creature of statute. We're established by an act of parliament. We have a mandate that is very, very broad. It has longevity, and it asks us to conduct directed and particularly multidisciplinary research and technological innovation to foster in the national interest in any field that we decide to. And as the chair of the board has indicated, we've just gone through a strategy. We've done exactly that, where we've chosen areas of focus for the organization. So that's mandated in the Act, and we do that in order to foster industrial and scientific development. One of the things the mandate is stressing is that we can do that in cooperation with others or by ourselves, and all of that we need to do it in order to improve the quality of life of the people of South Africa. So our mandate asks us to do what we do. We do research not just for the sake of it, but to do research in order to impact the quality of life of the people of South Africa. The Act further highlights certain aspects that we need to focus on. They ask us to ensure that there's better utilization of the resources of the Republic. As you may know, CSR was established about 74 years ago. Actually, we turned 74 years last Saturday on the 5th of October. And at the time of establishment, what was key to the legislators was that CSR and amongst other organizations should ensure that the country is able to develop and leverage the resources, given that we had plenty of mineral resources in the country for the development and industrialization of the country. So our mandate urges us to do that. And as you know, as you will tell also through our strategy, that's one of the things we want to continue to focus on. The mandate also asks us to focus on manpower training to improve productive capacity of its population. Later on, you'll hear a lot about the work we're doing in terms of human capital development, not only for ourselves, but also for the economy. And in light of our fourth industrial revolution, we're also looking at skills of the future to be involved in that field just as well. The third element that is emphasized is the improvement of the technical processes and methods to improve industrial production. So the innovation part of it is further elaborated on in our mandate. Lastly, we are asked to promote and expand existing as well as establishment of new industries. And hence, in our new strategy, we are talking about amplifying the industrial development part of the mandate, in addition to balance, and we intend to balance that, of course, with scientific development. We have, as indicated, just adopted a new strategy. The board approved the strategy during the last year, the year we are reporting on. And as part of that strategy process, we formulated a vision and a mission, which is something actually CSIR hadn't done before, but we felt we needed to propel ourselves forward, driven by a new vision as well as a mission. Our vision is that we are accelerators of socioeconomic prosperity in South Africa through leading innovation. So we're locating ourselves to be part and parcel of the solution to South Africa's socioeconomic development. And this is our vision, that we are seen as a key player in that regard. Our mission is that we collaboratively innovating and localizing technologies while providing knowledge solutions for the inclusive and sustainable advancement of industry and society. Our mission includes an element that we haven't always emphasized before, which is about not only innovating ourselves through our own resources, but also looking at some of the best technologies out in the world and bringing them for localization in our country in order, again, to advance the objectives of the economy and society. We have adopted new values. We call them EPIC, and those have to do with excellence. We've always associated ourselves to do whatever we do and to operate with excellence. So this is something that we're currently actually running a process to ensure that each and everyone in the organization embraces and lives by excellence. People-centered, I think this is already strongly suggested in our mandate, that what we do has to be ultimately before the improvement of the quality of life of the people of South Africa. So it starts there for us, our people-centeredness. But secondly, of course, people-centeredness in terms of our own people, like any organization, we have to pay attention to our people and ensure that they are nurtured in order to do the best for us.
Be careful not to spend the whole 45 minutes.
Okay, all right. Integrity is another...
Let's get into the actual...
Okay, report.
Reporting on the performance.
Right. Fair enough, Chef. My apologies. Integrity and then collaboration. Collaboration, you'll see that it features a lot in our reporting, or rather in the CSIR's approach, because I can't see very well, so I have to read this from here. This is a summary of the CSIR in terms of performance as of the end of March, but also it gives some summary information on the organization. We are located in Pretoria. Our main campus is in Pretoria. We've got a very big campus there. Also in Johannesburg, this is where our mining operations are largely located. We have operations in Durban. We have operations here in Cape Town. We host, I understand the portfolio committee is going to be visiting the Center for High Performance Computing, which is here in our Cape Town offices, and also in Stellenbosch we are located. As at the end of March, we had a staff base of 2,342. About 1,608 of those are what we call the set base, which is essentially science engineers and technologists, scientists, engineers and technologists. 62% of those are actually black South Africans, and 36% of those are female South Africans. We've got about 320 staff with PhDs, 586 with master's degree, and our publications are going to be dealt with as part of the full report on research highlights. Our total income last year was about 2.5 billion rand, and we earned about 5.4 million rands on royalties and licensing income, which is an area we want to actually improve on as we drive our new strategy. Our total investment in human capital development, as you know, our mandate has asked us to invest in that area. We spent about 126 million in that area. We have adopted 5 strategic objectives to conduct research and development and localize transformative technologies and accelerate their diffusion, to collaboratively improve the competitiveness of high-impact industries to support South Africa's reindustrialization, to drive the socioeconomic transformation through RDR, research, development, and innovation, which supports the development of the capable state, and to build and leverage human capital as well as infrastructure. And, of course, our big goal as well is to make sure that we diversify our income as a chair of the board has indicated and ensure we're financially sustainable and that we maintain good governance. I'm going to ask the chair of the board maybe to talk to that slide because that's his team he works with. I'm not sure if you want to get into detail. But
No, I think we can proceed. It's very self-explanatory.
The board started its term in January.
So it's only a PhD.
Quite a lot of PhDs.
So if you don't have a PhD, you can't serve in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, Chair, the executive management team, some of those people are here. The CEO is not here, as indicated. There's 2 other colleagues who couldn't join us today as well. So that's my part of the introduction overview of the CSIR. I'm going to give to my colleague Adile to talk to the human capital matters.
Okay, thanks, Kunga. Chair, I'm going to share with you, right, in terms of the initiatives and as well as how we're performing, right, in terms of building and as well as transforming, right, our human capital, right, within the CSIR. As the CEO, the chair, CSIR chair, alluded earlier, right, yes, we have a challenge, right, in terms of the retention, right, of especially of our set. And the reason being that in the past year, right, we've been focusing, right, on the restructuring, right, of the set. And because of the uncertainty, right, we've had quite a number, right, of professionals leaving the organization. But over and above that, we've had competition, right, from universities and as well as the banks that are approaching, right, our professionals. However, right, we have not just set, right, and accept. What we've done, we've put programs in place, right, in order, right, to grow, right, our own chief researchers, and as well as improving, right, the conditions of service, right, in order, right, to retain, right, those chief researchers. And of late, I mean, we've seen where we are now not losing, right, those chief researchers. The number of resignations, right, have gone down. So if we were to look, for instance, how we are responding, right, to the development of the chief researchers, right, we've got a program that we've put in place, which is the Accelerated Researcher Development Program, where we have 3 black males, right, and 5 black females, right, who in the next year, right, they'll be qualifying right as chief researcher. That's just one example. Over and above that, what we're doing right in terms of developing right the youth, right. So we at the CSIR we've worked with the undergraduate computer science and engineering students who compete internationally. Right. So if we look, for instance, in the past 5 years or so, the CSIR right has managed to be or to take the top honors right in the science space. And here we're talking where we're competing with the likes of China, United States, Germany, and the United Kingdom, right, in the computing space. So that shows that we are there and we're doing well, right, in terms of developing, right, the super computing. And if we look at how we're developing our staff as well, right, so these employees who are working with the CSIR on a full-time basis, we have supported them, right, and they've managed to complete, I mean, their studies. So if we look at the class of 2018, so 23 of those, right, attained their PhDs, right, and 57 of those attained their masters. So in collaboration with the Department of Science and Innovation as well, right, so we supporting, right, the students, right, to ensure that they acquire, right, their honors, masters, and also the PhD, their PhDs. And in the last financial year alone, we supported 348 students. Since the inception, 839. And these students, they don't just leave the CSIR. Some of them, we absorb them right into the CSIR. So this year, we started with what we call the Graduate in Training Program. And this program focuses on the development right of the engineers and as well as the scientists. And this talks to our mission, right, and also our vision, right, of innovation and also industrialization. And here we've got these students that are fully engaged, right, within the CSIR, and they have supervisors and as well as mentors, right, who are developing them, right, as future engineers and scientists. So in terms of the youth development as well, so there's a huge focus, right, so where we focus in both across the universities and as well as the TVETs, and more so focusing on the previously disadvantaged universities. So here, what we offer, other than the bursaries, we offer a full experience where we provide them with the mentorship, we provide them with the work exposure, in order for them, whilst they're learning, right, they also gain the work experience, and also the support, right, with the research work, in order for them to complete, right, and acquire, right, their qualification, where they submit theses that talk to the engineering or science field, and also providing them access, right, to the laboratory. So it's laboratories. So it's a full experience that we provide them, other than just provide supporting them with funds. So next, talking to the 4IR space. So in terms of the development of the skills of the future, so with the CSIR has partnered with Mercita, right, where we want to ensure, right, that we lead in the space and that we develop the skills of the future and ensure that we strengthen, right, the post-schooling education, right, and training, right, and that we support the rural township economic revitalization, the development of black industrialists, and also ensure that we improve, right, the commercialization, right, of technologies. So these are just but some of the outcomes, right, that we expect out of this initiative. And the total funding that we've committed, right, it's about 68.9 million, right, in the space, right. And then the next slide is just showing, right, the examples, right, of the initiatives or the characteristics of the curricula, right, that we run, right, as part of the development of the students, right, in this the skills of your future. So that's just examples. I'm not going to go into the details of that. So the examples is of the curricula that we cover is the computer programming, the information processes, processing and analytics, right, the artificial intelligence and data analytics, knowledge management, etc. And just finally, so in order to bring science, engineering, and technology, right, to the ground or to the public, so there's a number of initiatives that we're running, and these are run by CSIR full-time employees, right? So where we spend time either during the week or on weekends, right? For instance, in terms of career days that we run in townships, universities, previously disadvantaged universities, and in some cases where we run math and science training, right, to matriculants. So these are some of the activities that we run in terms of developing our human capital. So I'm just going to hand over, right, to the next. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. So in terms of the key performance indicators for the year, the publications are over 500. General articles consisting of 319 of those, and contract R&D income, which is an indication of relevance really, is about 1.7 billion rand. So we're going to go look at some of the highlights. We have three divisions, so we're just going to give a sample of a few highlights per division. For the Division 1, which consists of chemicals, agriculture, food, and health, there is a biomanufacturing industry development center that has been running for a few years. Now, what is significant about this is the over time, the activities have yielded. We have had 84 products and developed and transferred to enterprises in this area, 12 licenses signed. As a result of these activities, 75 jobs, permanent jobs, were created over a four-year period, about 80 interns supported, and about 40 placed in permanent positions. And this is quite an impactful vehicle that we're running. Now, in terms of the early detection of cardiovascular disease and novel pharmaceutical dispensing unit, we're giving two examples. So there is the CardiFlow, which is a cost-effective and reliable device that can identify individuals at risk of cardiovascular disease by using a Doppler ultrasound probe. So this simplified hardware and user, which is user friendly, eliminates the need for high skilled personnel operating the device. So a fairly trained person should be able to do this without being a specialist. Another one is the collaboration with Ride ePharmacy. Here we're looking at the technology to dispense medication through something that is similar to an ATM machine, which will enable the dispensing of medication quite is safe, and it should enable the dispensing of medicine quite safely in all sorts of different environments. So the next example is an antimicrobial packaging for avocados. So as you know, South Africa has very good quality avocados that we produce, but the shelf life is not as long. So with TUT, we have been able to find a solution to extend the life of these products, so that the export and the trading of these products, the shelf life gets longer, and more money can be made out of this. For Division 2, which is mining, manufacturing, defense, and security, there are technology roadmaps and high value manufacturing and done that includes the development of roadmaps for 8 companies in the aerospace industry, 7 of which are SMEs. The 15 technology have been transferred, and this include additive manufacturing for 3D printing microwave sub assemblies at one of the companies, localizing software-defined radio technology at Lantern, which is one of the companies. The technology localization implementation unit is funded by the Department of Science and Innovation, and it supports the development of it supported in the year of reporting development of 9 local manufacturers, and for valve and pump manufacturers to provide components for nuclear power station. And I think there is a slight misprint there. This aims to assist local manufacturers to be global competitive, and I think it's money well spent for the department. Investing in context aware and real time action, object recognition for smart factories. The CSR developed a robot that explores and maps unknown environments autonomously. When it recognizes an object, it approaches the object and takes inspection-style images from multiple angles. So this sort of technology fits into the 4IR type capability. For rhino poaching, the CSIR has developed this technology is called a Meerkat. It has three sensors, is radar, with a camera that can see a radius of 10 kilometers, a radar that can go up to 20 kilometers. The strength of this technology has been that in the Kruger National Park, where you have 80% of the rhino residing, the incidence of rhino poaching was cut by a factor of 90% within one reporting area. The technology can also be used for safety of infrastructure for the likes of Transnet, of PRASA, and of ESCOM. So some of these use cases have been developed, but this is the I'm happy to say that all the technologies, the sensors that are used here, are South African developed technologies. And we're hoping the Department of Environmental Affairs, I think, is looking to multiply the these systems being in as many places as possible, so as to protect the environmental assets. We have also been involved with the city of Joburg developing a center that enables the city of Joburg to respond effectively to cyber threats and tighten the security posture. It's been, I think the project has been running for 3 to 4 years. The idea is for the group, that is space of the CSR, to work with other metros to improve the cybersecurity posture of the metros and indeed of government at large. For the Division 3, we have developed the Green Book, which is an online tool that supports local government to plan and design climate resilient settlements that features detailed projections of future climate change with good resolution in terms of where the climate impacts are and vision to affect the settlements, and is growing from strength to strength which is able to give the people running this areas quite good resolution and different impacts that are likely to impact in terms in case management is not done properly. So the Red Book was launched by the Department of Housing. Minister Sulu, I think this is earlier in the year. So this Red Book is an electronic or printed guideline for human settlements planning and design. And actually, it's a gold standard for developing human settlements. Mixed developments that have all the practical amenities that need to be in a given environment when being development, including sanitation, stormwater management, electricity, energy, roads, transport, public, open spaces, and so forth. So there's also being a model for short-term renewable energy forecasting. This was done by our energy center. So given that South Africa is a carbon-intensive electricity footprint, the current transition into a less carbon-intensive one requires some tools to be able to do this effectively. So the CSR and ESCOM are developing a forecasting model to cater for the increased use of renewable energy. And so the work is in South Africa that deals with existing methods that are being built upon and tailored for the local conditions. So in terms of the we have capacity to inform water requirements of South Africa's multi-billion rand fruit industry. So a study was conducted for the apple producing environment in the Western Cape for the golden delicious apples. These were studied, and the findings were that the total orchard water use in high-yielding orchards ranged from 8,000 to just over 10,500 cubic liters per hectare, depend on canopy size. So this gives the a very intelligent way of managing resources and using state of the art watering methods and actually monitoring and evaluation thereof. So the Professor Linda Godfrey was involved in the first water management outlook for Africa. So here, the CSR plays a leading role in the publication of the first Africa Waste Management Outlook in 2018. And it provides an analysis of the state of waste management in Africa, its impact on the continent, and proposed solutions. And study found that the estimated 70% to 80% of the 125 million, million tons of municipal solid waste generated across Africa is recyclable, but only 4% of the waste generated is been recycled, which leaves a lot of room for improvement.
We've spent about 74 million rand in the last year on infrastructure development and renewal. We have what we call a campus master plan, which is about investing in general infrastructure as well as research infrastructure, particularly focusing at the moment in our Pretoria organization. We've just given you an update on some, or rather a brief on some of the projects that we are busy developing in line with that, with the campus master plan we have adopted by our board in 2016. I'm not going to go into detail into that, Chair, but we're happy to take some questions. I want to give up my colleague on the finances to have the floor.
Thank you, Kungeka. Honourable Chair and committee members, I'd just like to note that for the financial sustainability and governance, we focused on the key performance indicators and how we've performed against them, but we've provided an extract of our annual report from the financial statements should you have any specific questions on line items that you'd like me to address. So in terms of our total income, we had a target of 2.7 billion, and we achieved 2.5. This is basically a 0% growth on the prior year, so we didn't really achieve a top-line growth. However, we had targeted for a net profit, or basically to break even for the year, and we managed to turn over a small profit. We were proud of this because the prior year we made a 13 million rand loss, and the manner in which we did this is through actually reducing our operating loss. So you'll note if you've read the annual reports for the last few years that the CSIR has actually been making operating losses for a while. We have broken even or made a profit due to other income. So we needed to look at our operations in depth in the last year, and hence the comments around restructuring. We took a targeted approach to look at areas of the business where we were no longer viable. We had been trending losses for a while in certain areas of research. In many instances, those were areas where we are no longer competitive, and in some instances where they were more focused on early stage research, which is now being done by universities. And hence we did undertake a targeted restructuring. In our manpower costs, we only had an increase of 3%, 2% of that related to the actual cost of restructuring, and we'll see savings against that going forward. We are a level 3 contributor to BBEE. Our target was a level 2, but we didn't achieve that yet. We are working on that, specifically focusing on our skills development areas and our preferential procurement. Just in terms of preferential procurement, we have 94% of our procurement that is made from local suppliers, of which 85% is contributing to value add in BBE, and 11% of that procurement is by or from black women-owned entities. So we are making progress in terms of our preferential procurement. Our disabling injury frequency rate, our target was to reach just under 0.2%, and we had a 0.28, so we were slightly above that. We did have a few not serious injuries, but when we did our gap analysis, we've identified that the main challenge around safety is around a culture of safety. So the organization has been working very hard over the last year to develop our safety awareness. We formalized KPIs around safety in safety appointees' performance agreements. We have introduced a safety moment in every meeting so that we become more safety conscious. And we are also going to be implementing a behavioral safety program in the next year to improve on this. In terms of our financial sustainability, as I mentioned, we did manage to make a small profit, and we've had extensive cost containment measures and improvements around internal processes. So we did manage to bring our operating loss from $49 million down to $40 million, and that essentially went to our bottom line. Challenges, though, that we've had is around the government policy on contracting with state-owned entities, where the CSIR acts as an innovation partner for government, and yet we still need to go through a tendering process to actually supply those services to our public partners. We have specialized mandated services, and we've been seeking for a while to be able to receive a designated position as a government partner on innovation and research and development. And just as an example, we had about just over 300 million rand of potential contracts that we lost due to the tender processes, either due to just time delays or having to, been tricky for us in terms of that. We do have some very specialized facilities that are not actually available elsewhere in the nation, and yet we still tender for contracts to bring income through those facilities, which has been a challenge. Also, we have had a decline in national R&D investment. We did have cuts in our parliamentary grant, and we have had a negative business impact of the wage freeze. It actually far outweighs our potential savings from implementing wage freezes. As you would have heard colleagues mention previously, we have lost some of our key resources to other enterprises, not only research and technology enterprises, but the market as well. We are competing with the likes of Deloitte, Business Connection, and the banking sector to retain critical resources. So we have to be market-related in terms of our salaries. And also, because the CSIR has to raise 70% of our income ourselves through contract R&D, we need to be able to retain these critical resources. As you would have heard, we've already undertaken a restructuring process, so we have ensured that we are focusing on sustainable areas, and we did make a net saving on our employee compensation expense. But those that we have, we really do need to retain. So this is a challenge for us. In terms of maintaining good governance, we are happy to say that we received a clean audit for the 2018-19 financial year. As with every entity, there's always areas for improvement. And one of those focus areas is, for the CSIR is on irregular expenditure. We did have some reported irregular expenditure in our annual financial statements. It is a lot of that expenditure has arisen in previous years, and we discovered it now. Most of it we discovered ourselves and reported ourselves. But we are focusing on irregular expenditure because this is something that we want to have a zero in our financial statements on. Some of the initiatives that we've introduced is we have a strategic procurement unit that is now assisting on all expenditure over 30,000 Rand, which previously wasn't always the case. We've done extensive training throughout the organization. We found that, again, similar to safety, irregular expenditure is often an awareness challenge in terms of knowing what to do if you have a single source or sole source or different types of procurement. What we've also done is we've updated our organizational approval framework to specifically address procurement matters. Updated approval framework has been presented to our Audit and Risk Committee just yesterday, and we hope to have it implemented by the board at our next board meeting. So we are aware of this, and we are taking action to address it as best as possible. Another thing in terms of our Level 3 BBEE status, we are putting, again, as I mentioned, levels, initiatives in place to assist us to improve that status. Andile addressed some of those specifically related to our youth development programs and looking at learnerships. In terms of health and safety, our goal remains zero harm with zero disabling injuries and zero fatalities. I've spoken around some of the initiatives that we've embarked upon to improve this, and also we have a board-approved policy on safety, health, and environment and quality that should support this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for the presentation, very elaborate. So we will take the next presentation so that we can then discuss both of them at once. Who's coming next? NRF, the National Research Foundation. I hope they are here. So we'll just ask you to take the seat just behind you, and then ask the NRF to set up. Just help them quickly. No, lunchtime. Yesterday. Just set up the setup. I don't want us to waste a lot of time. Okay. Are we done now? All right. Welcome. Delegation from the National Research Foundation. We will now take this opportunity, hand over to you, introduce yourself and your team. I've already indicated we don't have enough time today. We're trying to squeeze everything in one day. So we will be giving you about 45 minutes to present, which will take us up to 11:30. And then we'll open up to members to engage until lunchtime. So we will release the CSIR after we finish the engagement. We thought we're going to first engage with the one presentation and then get to the next. But knowing my members as I do, we are going to go on and on and on. So it's better if we discuss both the two presentations. So we'll hand over to you, introduce yourself, and then each member of the team introduce themselves individually and then proceed.
Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Mapulani, good morning, and the members of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, Science and Technology. I'm Nompumelelo Loboko. I'm here this morning leading the delegation of the NRF as the chairperson of the NRF board. And we'd like to take this opportunity really to thank the chairperson as well as the members for giving us an opportunity to come and present on our 2018-2019 annual performance report. And I think going forward, we look forward to working with you as you discharge your duties, oversight duties, and ensuring that we move forward to South Africa, especially from us as NRF, as we really advance knowledge, transform lives, and also inspire the nation through science, technology, and innovation, and also, most importantly, grow our economy. So at this time, I would like to invite my colleagues, the corporate executives, to also introduce themselves before we go into the presentation. Thank you.
Chair, good morning, and honourable members. I'll introduce myself and the other colleagues as well, if it's okay, Chair. Time.
No, let's get individual introductions.
Thank you, Chair. Mulapo Kobela, Chief Executive.
Rob Adam, Managing Director of SA Radio Astronomy Observatory.
Good morning, all. I'm Bishan Singh. I'm the Group Executive for Finance and Business Systems.
Good morning. I'm Anaga, Executive for Corporate Governance.
Where is the mic? Oh, you can use the one next to you.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Petue Matutu, Group Executive for Strategy, Planning and Partnerships.
Okay. The reason why we want everybody to introduce themselves, we want to hear the voice. It's possible people come here to Parliament, they don't speak and go back, you know. It's unfair. So at least we need to hear the voice. All right, over to you.
Chairperson, thank you, and honourable members, good morning. Apologies from some of my colleagues who would not be able to make it. Two of our deputy CEOs, one is in Russia on business, another one is in Port Elizabeth. Other heads are also not able to make it, Chairperson. Due to executive responsibility. Chair, we really are, as our chair is indicating, absolutely delighted to have had this opportunity. We serve the country, and we want to start with this particular slide because it illustrates the nature of who we are in relation to the entire national science system, including the university system. So you would have heard from the CSIR, And this slide illustrates the relationship that we have with our government in green. So these are the policy partners of the organization. We help our government do a whole host of things, including policy. Although we report to the Department of Science and Innovation, we work very closely with DHET, with DOE, with DBE, health, DAF, DEA, DTI, everybody across the board. Likewise, with regulatory bodies, you would have met NSFAS, you have met NACI at some point. These are people that we work closely with, NSFAS have indicated, and you've heard from our colleagues in the CSIR, these are partners in red, these are the research performers, so some of the funds that we have go to the CSIR, to the HSRC, to universities, HAIs, MINTEC, you name them. Our role in terms of our mandate is to contribute to national development. We do that. So a lot of the money that you will see coming to us actually does not stay within the National Research Foundation. It is there to go into the system, to get the system to deliver on the work that we expect out of the research performing institutions, including our universities. So this is our legal mandate, Chairperson, supporting, promoting, and advancing research in and human capacity development. And we do that through a whole host of things. But we're the only organization that is responsible for doing that across all knowledge domains. So when you meet the Medical Research Council, they only deal with health. When you meet with our colleagues at the HSRC, it's only in human science and social sciences. When you meet with our colleagues from CSIR, it's very focused. But our responsibility covers all of those areas, including IKS. We provide national research facilities, national research platforms. You would have met Rob Adam yesterday when he came here talking about the intergovernmental treaty. We are responsible for looking after the nation's investment in astronomy, both optical and radio. So the Meerkat, not the Meerkat that was mentioned by CSIR, but Meerkat Karoo Array Telescope, which we would love to host you in Carnarvon, is one of the infrastructure platforms that is provided to the country to enable the country to be able to be at the forefront of radio astronomy research. We are tasked with promoting and supporting public awareness and engagement with science. And part of that engagement is with decision makers such as our parliament to be able to get all of our country to appreciate the value, the importance of science in both in everyday life, but also in terms of how science also transforms people's lives, the changes that it actually gives to you as an individual, but also to society more generally. And lastly, as I was saying earlier, promote the development and maintenance of the national science system. So we contribute, whether it's in forms of data, analytics, policy, whether it's to DSI or to DHET or to, for that matter, energy, whatever. Our responsibility is to be able to make that that contribution. Chairperson, the way we express this mandate, and we put it as simply as we can, is that we are here to advance knowledge. And we advance knowledge through the support we provide for research, whether it's at universities or whether it's at the science councils or wherever. Wherever research is being undertaken, particularly in the public sector, in fact, almost exclusively in the public sector, that is what we are here for. We provide research infrastructure, as I've indicated, and we provide research equipment. So there's a difference between equipment and platforms. The platforms are the big things that no one organization can own, but that is owned by the country. We transform lives, as the chair was saying. Postgraduate student support, I'll talk a little bit about that. Researcher support. We try our best through science to inspire the nation about the importance and the value of science so that there isn't a dichotomy in terms of approaching to say, why do we invest so much in this scientific endeavor and what value does it actually bring to us? There's a huge amount, and we need to be able to make sure that that interaction works positively for all of us. So we do that through what we call science engagement, through education, awareness, and communication. And lastly, we strengthen the national system of innovation through partnership synergy, providing system-wide information and intelligence and policy advice. And so that's how we do the work that we are supposed to do. organizationally chair, you will probably know us. We're a board appointed by the minister. This is our chair. We've got four programs, a number of divisions. I have the honor of being the CEO for the organization. And so everything we do is not factored in terms of the programs or the divisions, but it is harnessed around those four key elements of transforming lives, inspiring a nation, and advancing knowledge. Chair, you'll find us across the entire country. Open invitation. We have a number of our facilities here in Cape Town. Northern Cape, for those that come from the Northern Cape, is the home of South Africa's astronomy. We have facilities up in Limpopo, in the Eastern Cape, in PE and Grahamstown, as well as KZN and obviously Gauteng in the Northwest. In terms of performance, and you will help me, Chair, if there are particular areas that you would wish us to focus on, but in terms of performance, I want to start by talking about how we have done with regard to one aspect, which is advancing knowledge and a performance review for the year under review 18-19. To a little bit of context, we supported 4,708 researchers. The vast majority, I would probably say about 98% of them, are at universities. Some of them are, as I said, at the CSIR and other places. But to put context, there are currently 19,000 full-time researchers at our universities, full-time. However, there are 55,000 all-inclusive, which includes what I would call the part-timers. So we are only able to support a relatively tight grouping. And this is something that we can pick up next week when we come to the colloquium, Chairperson. And one particular area that we really have struggled, because we have targeted ourselves to contribute to the transformation of this national science system, is particularly looking at black researchers and women researchers. The target for women researchers in our strategy and our strategic plan was not met, in part because the volume, the number of applications that we have been receiving has been declining. And we principally attribute that to the fact that the amount of money that we give as research grants has also been declining. So our expectation of quality, our expectation of evaluation has not changed. So you work harder for less. So these are some of the issues. But everything else that is in green, we met and obviously exceeded those targets. Our investment in terms of research grants, equipment grants, and postgraduate students comes to about $2.32 billion for the year under review. And this is the distribution, Chairperson. The vast majority, 29% of it, is in the biological chemical sciences. And contrary to what some people may think, we do a significant investment in arts and humanities and social sciences. There's agriculture, health, sciences, mathematical sciences, and other areas, Chair, that we have not necessarily highlighted in a very specific manner, but we do cover every knowledge domain across. So that's the current distribution. The way we work, Chair, is we are in tune with what our country expects out of the science system. And so this is what our NDP has highlighted as priority issues for us as a country to respond to, and science and research in science must contribute to that. And I'll give us some examples, particularly with regard to quality education for all, quality healthcare, capable state serving the people. I'll just give examples of how we do as a contributing fact into that. But obviously we cover all of those, including the Sustainable Development Goals. In health, by way of example, we have a number of research chairs as well as centers of excellence. Centers of excellence are people that we bring together to work as a cluster on a particular challenge that we have put in front of them. And we've got three centers. One is in strong materials. And as you would have noted in the slide, that they develop a diamond sensor for radiography measurements for mammography. Did I say it right?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And we do TB screening, which is another one of the burdens of diseases, and obviously HIV/AIDS. The TB research is being done by a center of excellence, which is split between WITS and UCT, and our colleagues at UKZN lead in the research on HIV/AIDS. Poverty and inequality is one of the intractable problems of our society. We have a cluster of researchers that work in this area. This is just one example of economists who are asking us as a country to rethink the inequity and inequality problem of our nation and to find solutions that think out of the box. And this is what science is supposed to help us deal with. These are just two colleagues that work out of the Southern African Labor and Development Research Institute, which is based here at the University of Cape Town, Marie Leibrand and Vamil Ranshot. In education, by way of example again, we have a cluster of research chairs who work in maths education. We are partnering with the First Rand Foundation and the Department of Basic Education. We brought these colleagues together from different universities whom we fund and under what we call the Math Education Chairs Initiative. Training and development of teachers is the objective. Improving maths results is the second objective. Research sustainable and practical solutions to why is it that as a country we're doing so poorly, and what are the very practical solutions that we can introduce and provide leadership, obviously, in the maths education arena. And this is the work that colleagues do, particularly in the universities. The research platforms that I talked about earlier, Chairperson, are platforms that we hold on behalf of the country. No one university can own these. No one university can run, or for that matter, no one research institution, be it the CSIR or the HSRC or Mintec, because they are so large and also, sorry, they are so expensive. So you would have heard about the South African Radio Astronomy Observatory, which has the telescopes in Carnarvon, and Rob Adam is the managing director. Kulu is the new communications head in that area. A similar astronomy facility in Sutherland, all of them are yours to visit and to appreciate the value that they bring. The South African Institute of Aquatic Biodiversity is another facility that does aquatic biodiversity research, both in the freshwater as well as in the sea, and they're based in Makanda. And Scion is spread out throughout the country from Limpopo to Cape Town as well as the Eastern Cape. And then lastly, the one right here in Cape Town, the Itemba Laboratory for Accelerator-Based Sciences. It does particle physics, nuclear particle physics research. And it's the only one in the Southern Hemisphere which actually does this and on the continent. And so it's a resource for the entire country. And so postgraduate students come in here to basically train. We provide at no cost to researchers at universities to come and undertake research. And they participate in science engagement to make sure that the nation appreciates the importance and the value of science. In terms of their performance in the year under review, those that we have marked in borders of red, we, in the formal sense of the word, our targets were not met, and the reason that we did not meet those targets has been cited in the annual report, and it was one of those challenges where we set the target and the technical indicator descriptor was changed by the Auditor General at the time when it was audited. So I'll use an example. Users, the number of users was reduced because the AG felt that students should not be counted as users. And so that's an example of what we thought was, it made sense. If you are a student, you are a user of the facility. Similarly, the AG felt that the person has to be physically present at the facility. But sometimes we produce data. And so you don't have to be physically in Sutherland to be able to use the telescopes because everything is now remote. So you can be sitting on your computer and instruct the telescope to do the work that it's supposed to do. So these are things that we are working with the AG to fix, but that is our performance under here under the review. The citation impact, which is a measure of the quality of the research that has been done, is significantly higher than the global average. And we're incredibly proud because there many of our scientists, both at universities and at these national facilities, publish in the highest quality journals that you will find in the world, Nature included. The ocean's economy is a big issue, Chair, and we just used this as an example. Operation Pakisa, you'll recall, and so we do a significant amount of contribution in the environmental sciences space. This is an example. And so our colleagues in Grahamstown as well as Port Elizabeth work on mapping new areas of marine protected areas. We advise our government as to which areas should be protected and why, in order for us to be able to make sure that we are able to extract maximum value out of the resource that is available to the nation, including looking for gas. So if you are going to be drilling for gas, you need to be able to understand and appreciate what is around those areas which you're going to be drilling. Similarly, Chair, in the environmental sciences, many, many years ago, you might recall the former minister, the late Kader Asma, when he introduced Working for Water. And Working for Water, we went about clearing alien vegetation to enhance the flow of water into our rivers. And in the early days, the way we did it was people went out down the streams and look. Nowadays, because of technology, we have introduced technology, satellite technology in particular, to be able to look for alien vegetation. And then we clear alien vegetation. And this is just an example of the significant finding of the research that water losses to invasive plants are enough to supply Cape Town for between 15 to 40 for 40 days, just simply through the clearing of alien vegetation. And this is the sort of impact that we are looking for through these sort of technologies that our researchers is able to do. Law enforcement, people who do illegal plowing. Sometimes you only capture the fact long after the event has happened, but using technology we are able to pick it up more in real time. In the area of astronomy, Chair, we improve not just our understanding as researchers, but our understanding as humanity on the ways in which galaxies are formed, stars die, planets are created, and the like. And so the work that we do, both in optical infrared and radio astronomy, improves our understanding. And the Southern African Large Telescope, a 10-meter telescope in Sutherland, the largest in the Southern Hemisphere, this is an example of the work that they have been doing to look at how suns die. There's no chance of our sun dying while we're still alive. So we are still okay. But understanding that entire process is useful for us to be able to know basically how our solar system works. You have heard about the SKA project, the Meerkat telescope, the 64 dishes. We'll be adding, hopefully in the coming year, another 20 dishes. And as you would have heard from the intergovernmental treaty, those dishes will then become part of the international SKA project. But that telescope is the most powerful, as you have heard, in the world, and we have been able to improve our understanding through the discovery of the evolution of galaxies, understanding even our own galaxy a lot better than before. and should there be questions, my colleague Dr. Rob Adam is here. In radiation biophysics, Chairperson, we do a lot of work at Itemba, from making sure that materials are hardened properly. When you get on your plane, you want to make sure that the wings, the material that is used, is strong enough for the tensions, and that's what we check. We produce radioisotopes for detection of cancers, for curative purposes. We also use radiation biophysics to understand some of the questions that we put here. Why do elephants produce less cancer than humans? And so it's understanding the cancer genes, looking at where exactly could be the cause of the problems that we ultimately go and cure. So it's basic science also having real impact on individuals and on the lives of individuals. On research equipment, Chair, this is our performance under the year under review. We missed the target for publications emanating from the use of equipment. It wasn't significantly bad, but one of the things that we have to get right is that sometimes the science of publication is not exact. You think you will be able to produce a paper, but that paper doesn't always materialize because the act of undertaking research is not a perfect science in itself. But just to illustrate by way of example, the equipment that we provide support for, the Center for High Resolution Transmission Electron Microscopy, which is based at the Nelson Mandela University, provides support not just to researchers in academia and the research system, but also to the private sector. An example here to Sasol, and an example here to ESCOM. To Sasol in terms of improving their understanding of crystal structure and catalytic activity of the chemicals that they use, and to ESCOM in terms of supporting power generation in industry, something that I think all of us would like ESCOM to deliver more of. You would have also heard the fact that we have invested in satellites, microsatellites, small ones. This is work that is done at the Cape Peninsula University of Technology down the road. And so we invest in the Cube satellite program. And the picture on the left is the first satellite data on the surveillance of ships along our shoreline, because we need to know with the movement, because you sometimes also have pirate ships. You also have people who go and start fishing in areas that they're not supposed to be. And this is how you use that that technology. With regard to students, Chair, this is an area that we're grateful that our ministry is now joined, Higher Education, Science and Tech, because we as the NRF serve not just the research system, but also the higher education system. We provide support to postgraduate students. We partner with NSFAS. NSFAS looks after the undergrads, and we look after the postgrads. And this is just to give you a sense of a little bit of context. 98, we supported 1,127 honor students out of 32,000 that are in the national system. In 2017, we supported 4,730 honor students out of 67,000. So the system has grown. We'll talk about money next week, but just to give you a little bit of context, if I recall correctly, we're investing as a country something in the order of about $30 billion for undergraduate support for NSFAS students. We are investing as a country in the order of 850 million rand for postgraduate students. So it's a different order of magnitude. So in the context, we are able, if we are lucky currently, to support less than 10% of the total national enrollment in postgraduate education. We have a target that of those that we support, 80% must be black, 55% must be women. On the left-hand side, you will see the black representation. At honors and BTEC is 90. At master's is 80. At doctoral is 76. At postdoc is 61. And on the female, 60 at honors, 58 at master's, 53 at doctorate. And we're not necessarily happy with this picture, and we'll talk a little bit later about the policy changes that we're introducing to try and improve that particular picture. Likewise, with the researcher cohort, you will have seen that starting in 2011, we started with 26% of our researchers were black, and we are now sitting in 40%. We are not necessarily happy, but in terms of proportions in the system, it is a reasonable proportion. But again, we'll talk about what we are doing with that issue going into the future. These are some of the people who have benefited. Many of the people sitting in this room, whether from the CSIR or from the National Research Foundation, in one way or another, Chairperson, including some of them who are working in Parliament, were supported by the National Research Foundation and its predecessor. And they wouldn't be where they are if we had not made that kind of investment. These are just examples. Thabo Mseibe is the youngest dean of education in the country. He's at UKZN, the dean of education. Mamukheti, I suspect many of us know. She lives just around the corner from us at UCT, and Chilidzi. Chilidzi started with us in 1989 when he was a high school student, and he won the Science Olympiad, in which I'll talk to you a little bit. And from there, that's how we have been working with him all the way up until he became a research chair, P rating, and he's now a vice chancellor. And that's the partnership. And the change of how you transform opportunities for individuals. In areas of science engagement, Chair, we do a lot of work in terms of advancing public awareness and appreciation engagement with science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and innovation. We run Olympiads, and we would be grateful. We'll resend every year we hold them. This year, we about 3 weeks ago, we had the Olympiads. This young lady, Malebo Dibele, from Nelson Ngobeni Primary School in Mpumalanga, won the top grade four learner in Junior Natural Science and Olympiad. So we track them like we track Chilidzi. And so we might come back and say, well, 20 years later, this is where Malebo is. In terms of, and that's the sort of impact that we look for. In terms of the performance under the year and the review, there's a slight error. There shouldn't be a red box under the public. We actually exceeded that target, Chair. With the learners, we underperformed. And again, we're a relatively small organization, so we work in partnership. You will see it in the annual report where we partner with various provincial departments of education to try and access the learners. We run the National Science Week. Some of the members of the committee might have been in Kimberley this year. Very cold in Kimberley when we had the National Science Week. But that's delivered by a unit of the National Research Foundation called the South African Agency for Science and Technology Advancement, SASTA. These are some of the former recipients. The National Science Week has been, the National Science Olympiads has been running for 55 years. 55 years this year. These are some of the former recipients. In 1980, Tutula Balfour was a recipient and a winner of the National Science Olympiads. And she's a medical doctor, and now she is the head of health at the Minerals Council, and there are many others who have benefited from the work that we have done over the years, Chairperson. And Christina Velikazi, I don't know if she will get a promotion, Chair. She's currently a senior director at CSIR.
In terms of the corporate performance, Chair, we're a small organization. We try and be lean and really, really be lean. Operational efficiency, we have targets of corporate overheads of less than 3%, organizational overheads of less than 10%. You would notice that we are under with regard. The one area where we are striving and we are deliberately wanting to make a big push is in terms of female representation, particularly in the managerial core. We missed that target by 2 percentage points, but we are not necessarily happy with being in the 30s. Ideally, we should be somewhere closer to the 50s, and that's the work that we will be doing into the future. We work with a whole range of partners, Chair. I just want to cite on this slide just two. Maybe I'll do three, because there's so much. The Science Granting Council Initiative is an initiative where we contribute to the development of science on our continent. Many of our countries on the continent don't have organizations such as the National Research Foundation. So we have been working in partnership with 15 other countries to help them establish organizations such as ourselves. It allows us then to be able to ensure that South Africa is integrated into the African science system, so that you have partners that you can actually work with, and that's strong. And those 15 partners range from Senegal, Cote d'Ivoire, Burkina Faso, Ghana, Tanzania, and the like, and we can give you that that long list. We are a member of the International Science Council. We serve on the board of the Global Research Council, which is all the funding agencies of the world, from the National Science Foundation of the United States, through to the Germans, the Japanese, 80 of us, we are part of that, and we share our best practice in terms of how we should be doing and advocating for science, and we'll be hosting them next year. Max Planck is one of our partners on the Meerkat project, just to name a few. Locally, Chairperson, we partner with the CHE. One of the things that we're currently doing is we are working with them looking at the quality of doctoral training. We partner, as I said earlier, with the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, and I'll talk a little bit about that as we conclude. We partner with the Oliver and Adelaide Tambo Foundation, where I won't let the cat out of the bag. There will be a big announcement, and I think I don't want to take the thunder out of the foundation, but I would encourage those that are able to attend the memorial lecture on the 26th of this month at the O.R. Tambo Foundation in Johannesburg. It'll be in Johannesburg at, what's that thing out just outside the airport? Birchwood. It'll be at Birchwood. We send the details, Chairperson. They must invite you. It's Maxine Walters, who will be the Honorable Maxine Walters from the representative from the United States. She will be the keynote speaker. But I'll make sure that you get an invitation, Chairperson, the honorable members all. Yes. All of us. And like I said, Chair, these are just examples of people that we work with. But the slide was just too busy. I've already mentioned the First Rand, Nedbank, etc. This is an example of how we are integrally intertwined with the Department of Higher Education and Training, and that's why we're so pleased that we now are under one ministry. So we developed for the Department of Higher Education and Training an electronic mechanism of them undertaking a research evaluation of the research outputs of universities. We are partners, so we did that for them. And this system, this electronic system, helped them, because there are people who can be a little naughty sometimes. It helped them to make sure that they eliminate inaccurate claims, value of $8.5 million in 2017 and $18 million in 2018. And this is the value that we bring to the system. Chairperson, as I conclude, because you did say that we need to be out of here quickly, the financial overview in terms of income, we're looking at about $4.116 billion.
And again, I want to stress, that money does not sit with us. It goes out to do work in the national science system. So we can tell you exactly how much went to which university, which science council, to which project, to which individual, et cetera, et cetera, through a register of grants that that we have. But you will notice that the total income decreased in nominal terms by 13%, a decline in real terms, the parliamentary grant, which is what we really worry about more than anything else, declined also. And of particular concern is that the parliamentary grant constitutes only about 20-odd% of the total income. And that's where the board is able to make strategic choices. The rest comes spoken for, and therefore you can't exactly shift it and say, well, Parliament has asked us to increase investment in postgraduate students, but we can't take it from X to Y. So those are conversations that we are currently having with our department and obviously the National Treasury. In terms of expenditure, Chairperson, it was 4114, and mathematics will say that 2 million was the difference between expenditure and income. And you've got to be able to make sure that every single penny, as far as it is humanely possible, goes towards those areas that we have identified. And you'll have noticed, Chair, in terms of what we have challenged ourselves, is that operating expenditure, total expenditure on grants, we have a of targets of less than 45%, salaries less than 22% as a total of expenditure, and as a total expenditure excluding grants of 55%, and that's how we have performed. The bulk of our money goes towards grants. Operating expenses is the next one at 20%, and salaries and capital expenses, it's at 14 odd million. This is excluding capital expenses that would have gone as equipment grants to institutions. Because remember, in that grant is also infrastructure that actually services. This is research infrastructure that actually supports the organization. In terms of other form, because I know Parliament is acutely interested, you would have noticed we got an unqualified audit. We got an unqualified audit this year and the previous year. We didn't get a clean audit. We're actually surprised, Chair. Very surprised. We're still having a conversation with the Auditor General, because what tripped us last year was that we had irregular expenditure of about 30-odd billion. Million, not billion. 30-odd million. It came down this year to about 4 million. But there are other entities which also had irregular expenditure but got clean audits. So we're still having conversations as to consistency. Going into the future, Chair, it is obviously to make sure that, like our colleagues of the CSR, we bring irregular down to zero. And hopefully we will come back to the clean status. But going into the future, Chair, these are things that we will be hopefully get an opportunity of coming back to you on. We're developing a new tenure strategy. And key in terms of that new strategy is to accelerate our transformation agenda, to increase the impact of the work that we do, to ensure that it influences and shapes the national science system for the better, to enhance excellence in everything that we do, including research excellence. We'd never want to be parochial. And lastly, to ensure that we are sustainable in everything that we do. Our strategy is anchored on an organizing framework of people, which are the researchers and the postgraduate students, the knowledge enterprise, which is really anchored around the research agenda, and I'll talk a little bit about that, investing in infrastructure, renewal, replacement, because if you stop that, you will not be at the forefront of knowledge. The worst thing that you can actually start doing is to ask people to work with technology of 20 years ago, while other people are working with technology of the future. Strengthen the relationship between science and society, improve the nature of the organization that we are, and obviously in terms of resourcing, assure the resourcing base of the system as well as the organization. Some of our future plans, and this is the partnership that we have had with the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, from 2021 academic year, we will be introducing a new policy whose objective is very simple: to enhance equity of access, success, and throughput through funding. Over the last 20, 30 years, the nature and the profile of postgraduate students has fundamentally changed, not just in terms of race and gender, but also in terms of the first-generation postgraduate students. We used to talk about first-generation university, but it's also first-generation postgraduate. A young person who would have been funded through NSFAS is now knocking on the door and saying, look, I want to be a professor in the future. So how am I going to do it if there isn't a policy synergy between how government looks at me at the undergraduate level and the postgraduate level? So that's what we are introducing. We are introducing funding to cover full total cost of study, consistent with NSFAS policy at 350 family gross family income, and obviously there are thresholds of academic performance, and obviously there are a whole range of other issues that we have introduced, particularly to enhance throughput, is to say to a young person, if you are hungry, you are willing, you are prepared to really be somebody, we will guarantee you that bursary at total cost from honors through to PhD. Don't have to reapply, but you have to deliver. And that's all that we ask. A new program for exceptional early career researchers. We have to look after the brightest and the best in our system. And the objective is really to transform the equity profile of South Africa's leading international researchers, the people who are leading lines of our science system must be able to come from any part of the country. And so this is a program that we are hoping to introduce in 2022, targeting in particular black and women researchers. And hopefully, with your support, we will run this over a period of 20 years. Every year, we're taking in cohorts. And with support of up to 15 years maximum, for an individual to be able to fulfill their full potential. We are looking at developing a research agenda, an opportunity, if it arises, Chair, that we would love to bring to you, a research agenda that ensures that our investment is tied to a common thread of delivering an outcome and impact that I think we all desire. We want to be able to use a research agenda to plan and to act by design as a coherent organization, and to be able to provide a mechanism of giving expression to the strategy that I mentioned earlier, of those anchors of driving our transformation agenda, driving our impact agenda, driving our excellence agenda, and obviously assuring our sustainability. Chairperson, that is who we are. We hope that we have done as best as we could under the year under review. We strive to continue to improve on everything that we do, and at the heart of it, our responsibility is to the entire national science system and not just merely to look at ourselves in terms of our own organizational performance. Our performance is measured by the success of the science system as a whole. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CEO, and thank you for the very inspiring presentation. The good work that NRF, National Research Foundation, is doing. You see, it was proper that everybody must introduce themselves because you took everything. Even the finances, even the financial part, the norm is that the CFO must present, but you presented everything. So, thank you very much for that. Members, I hope you have been taking notes. So we will engage both presentations, NRF and CSIR, at the same time. So if you have got questions for this, it's not compulsory that you have to ask questions for NRF and for CSIR. If you don't have a question, there's no need for you to ask a question. We're trying to maximize on time. I think we're doing fine up to so far. Okay, I'm going to open up the question. We'll start with Honorable Manani, so Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Nodada, Honorable Gezi, Boshoff, Sibiya, Kacho. No. Did I say Honorable Sibiya? No, we start with Honorable Mananiso, Boshoff, Nodada, Gezi, Ngobo, and Mkacho. Oh, you are itching to start first, Honorable Ngobo, because you're not here yesterday. Okay. Yeah, because you are that side. You know, I'm here, I can have a better view of whose hands was first up, so she was first. Okay,
thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation, both presentation from CSIR and NRF. And I think I must indicate that whatever that I'm going to speak to, it speaks to both presentations, because I've even made some notes in terms of pages that I've went through. One of the things that we must take in cognizance is the issue that when we drive the transformation agenda, there are things that we must not omit when we do reports. I've been consistently watching both reports. When you populate your statistics in terms of your achievement, you'll be specific on the issue of black race. Why do you have to leave out the white population? Because for us here as parliamentarians, we'd want to see everybody benefiting, and we don't want to assume to say that perhaps the one that is left is white people and so on. So please make sure that when you populate statistics, you even include other races. And on CSIR page 4, on the issue where they indicate about CSIR in numbers, on your right-hand side where you've got numbers in terms of set base, black South Africans and female South Africans, my interest is the issue of what about the youth and people with disability in your workplace? Do you have statistics that you can give us as this committee to say at least there are these people that we have as a youth representation and as well as people with disability? The other thing, Chair, is with regards to if you can check both presentations and the pictures of people on the board. I think the issue of transformation agenda in terms of human capital, including young people, is an agent matter. You see the picture, you don't even see the representation of the society at large. So you need to fast track in terms of your recruitment. I've been noticing that every time when you do this high-level presentation, at the end you do enkosi, thank you, realebuka, siyabonga. How far are you in terms of putting this whole content into indigenous languages? Because our interest is not only about the learned, but the society at large. You must be able to indicate where you could have made strides to say that at least you have transformed
some spaces where when you even go to our communities, you are able to speak with your language. Lastly, Chairperson, it's on the issue of the budget in terms of the register of beneficiaries. As this particular committee, we are interested in terms of who is the beneficiary, because we are representing the public. I want, when I go to my constituency, I'm repeating this, as I said yesterday, when we go to our constituencies, we want to speak in numbers and name to say at least 1, 2, 3 have benefited in this particular process. So when you come here, please give us those issues, because before we belong here, we come from branches, regions, and as well provinces. So and hence those particular spaces in on your content. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Borshoff.
Thank you, Chair. There are always more things one want to comment, make a comment on than time allows. But thank you very much for both of the presentations. I have a specific thing that I want to ask something about. You mentioned the research output subsidies to universities. Now, I've asked something about this from before, but I would like to come back to it until we have something tangible to work with. If I'm correct, and maybe the CFO of the CSIR can help me with that, the research output subsidies to universities only go to universities, meaning that researchers with other institutions like museums or the HSRC or the CSIR, the researchers themselves can get grants from the NRF, but it's not part of the financial model of the other institutions. And I want to know what the possibility is of expanding that subsidy to other institutions than universities, because they give similar support to the researchers to be able to do the research, which are actually acknowledged by peer-reviewed journals and so on, than the universities do. So it seems to me they should be entitled to the same benefits. The question, of course, is the money somewhere to be given, because no money can be handed out if it doesn't exist. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. No, Dad.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody. Chair, first of all, I'd just like to make a comment to say that I think the entities in the science and innovation portion of the ministry actually do fairly well based on the reports that we've received and compared to other ministries that I do attend. It's quite shocking. But I'll separate my questions and comments based on CSIR and the NRF. Firstly, in terms of the CSIR, I just wanted to pose a question as to, is there a specific reason why majority of your targets or your key performance indicators were not met? If you look at page 7 of the slides that we have, maybe you've got particular reasons that the majority of those targets are not met. Maybe I missed that portion of things. Secondly, I appreciate the information that is given in terms of graduate and training. Is there a particular relationship you have with those institutions that, you know, house majority of the students that you have graduate in training? Because I see some institutions that actually, you know, don't appear at all. I'll give you an example. There's University of Pretoria there, there's WITS, you know, Stellenbosch University, and majority of the students in training come from those institutions. And if you're talking about making sure that we transform our society and change people's lives for the better, particularly those that are poor and disadvantaged, you would like to also look at institutions like the University of Fort Hare that actually produces BSc students and many of these particular disciplines that I think we would like to focus on when it comes to science and innovation. So I just wanted to check if you have a comment on that for me. And then lastly, on the CSIR, there's around the finances. There is a comment there that says, part of the challenges is that the 382 million that was lost is due to the tender processes in the government sector. Can you just maybe explain what was the impact of that? And is there any suggestion that you have in place to try and improve and avoid having those particular losses? Then, just to jump into the NRF very quickly, Chairperson, I would just like to say, first of all, for me, I don't know if I'm the only one who felt this way about this particular presentation. One, we would have liked to see, and personally, we would like to see the target versus the actual achievement, not just to see a red block around, we didn't meet this target. I mean, the CAO would comment and say, we missed this target by 2%, for example. So part of our oversight duty is to say, how much did you actually not meet the target for, to get some of the challenges, so that when you deal with your APP come the next financial year, we're able to, say, make the relevant suggestions and comments around whatever your targets would be or whatever your performance plans would be. So I think that's the one point. Secondly, in terms of finances, we would also have liked to get the full breakdown of which university got X amount and all of that type of information, so that we actually know when we do the oversight role, where the places, because our role is to also find the gaps so that we can make the relevant comments based on the overall objectives of the country and what we're trying to achieve. So I think that's just an overall comment that I would just like to make. Maybe there's a reason of just, you know, putting the red blocks, but I think I would have liked to see the targets versus what was actually met or what was not met, so that we can make the relevant comments and make our own determination of what inputs we do, what we do make. Secondly, you know, just excuse me, Chair, I just made notes on my presentation. Secondly, I think we should welcome the point of actually visiting some of those sites. I actually didn't know some of them actually exist, and I think, I mean, as a person from the Eastern Cape, but, you know, immediately visit the ones that I have access to as a member of Parliament just to see the type of the work that has been done. But I think the previous honourable member did mention that we need to get actually a full breakdown of the people that actually benefit from the programs that you have. And I just wanted to ask, you made a comment about the reason why some of these targets, in particular postgrad students, were not met is because the AG changed the description based on that. And I just wanted to ask a question, is that the only reason why that target was not met? Or are there any other, you know, fundamental reasons, maybe around funding or whatever the case may be, that have actually contributed to the NRF not meeting those particular targets? And the last two points, Chair, I wanted to ask if you could maybe comment on what the relationship of the NRF and NSFAS is based on the, you know, scarce skills or the targeted skills or outputs that you would like to achieve as an entity. And whether do they actually report to you in terms of whatever funding you would have dispersed to them to be able to fund a particular grouping of students with those particular skills that you think we need to be able to achieve? And if not, what is the relationship so that I can maybe have a better understanding of how you fit in there? And then lastly, just to give props, something that we always, in fact, always encourage is to be able to track where the people that you've contributed to are actually are and what they're doing, you know. And I think it's something good to do, and we'd like to see even more of the broader spectrum of people, you know, that you say, you know, these people went through the system, we funded these individuals, and this is where they are, you know, so that we can get a breakdown and, you know, and be able to see the overall impact. And, I mean, I appreciate the fact that we've seen some individuals that are particularly familiar to us, but it's actually something that is encouraged even abroad across all these entities that we deal with. And I think I'll stop there, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much. Is it Honorable Mwago or Gates?
Thanks, Chair. I think it's always advisable to speak first so that your points are not hijacked in the process.
look, I think
Well, perhaps let's welcome both the reports and also welcome everyone who came from the Council of Scientific Industrial Research and the National Research Foundation. I'm going to try to couple some of the questions because I believe that they will correlate. Right, I will start with the CSIR. In terms of the repositioning of the organization itself, we want to check the impact it had made, right, in as far as the industries is concerned. One would look at the effectiveness of our industries and how do you look at the expansion of the whole concept of industries and even establishing new industries, because I believe that the Council of Scientific Industrial Research shouldn't just be limited on the, you know, the asking work, you know, in a form of research. You question. There should be recommendations. There should be findings on how we can better and perhaps, you know, re-industrialize our economy in this country, and as a result, to create jobs or employment for our people. Yeah, so that will then be informed by how many perhaps industries we have assisted in terms of expansion, because we need to have numbers now. We cannot speak about we have done that. So we need to know how many industries have we had direct influence and impact in, and how you have assisted them in terms of creating those employment. Well, I think some of the points, as I have mentioned, they've already taken them. I mean, I also want to check the criteria that is being used to, that is with regard to CSIR. The criteria that you employ to check how many students you are going to finance in these institutions of higher learning. Because, you know, University of Pretoria has like 54, as I have read it correctly. And you have University of South Africa with 8. Right. So, does it depend on the importantness of an institution, or how close proximity it is to whiteness, or previously advantaged, or I do not know, because it does not make a scientific or mathematical sense to give UP 54 students who are being funded, and UNISA, you give them 8. UNISA has almost more than half of South African student population, UP is quite small. Unless if you want to convince us that these bursaries and the form of assistance you provide only have eyes of selecting where and how we reach there. I must appreciate also the previously disadvantaged institution. I can see you tried to include them. You even wrote a red block there. I think it's a red line to say no. From this line below, there are those ones that do not really matter. I want to use that, because if they did matter, we could have seen massive improvements in many institutions there. And I don't know, maybe it's because of the nature of your research, you are looking for specific fields of studies or faculties, you know. But let us be taken into confidence, because it does not make sense for Sefako Makgatho University, where it's a medical school, that's where we find doctors, but it's only one person there who's funded. I don't know if it's people or a percentage. But I see one there. It's really worrying, honestly. It's extremely worrying. Let's look into that, as opposed to, you know, how these things are arranged from the top. UP, Wits, Stellenbosch, you know. Let's find out what is really happening there. The National Research Foundation. I think one of your mandate was to perhaps develop some research facilities where, you know, we would ordinarily use those facilities to come up with
concrete solutions to our, the problems that are facing our country. I want to check, is there any national research facilities that you had developed and established as an organization from the NRF? Well, the red borders, that the targets are not met, we wanted to check the initial targeted number, they have raised it. Now, with transformation, maybe we understand the concept of transformation in a different way. Because in most cases, when people speak of transformation, we tend to be, you know, we tend to be narrowed to the question of color or race. Transformation is not all about, you know, we have hired 60 black males and females and 20 whites and Indians. Well, that's not how you ordinarily explain transformation. There should be transformation, I believe, that it should be looked in a broader sense. Because now when every time when you bring reports, and you are not the only entity that does that, everyone, whether it's the department, whether it's the NSFAS, when they come, they say transformation, they give us the numbers of white people and black people, forgetting that the very same system need to be transformed itself, right? How do you then expect a researcher? That maybe that's why you are not funding some of these students who are studying in the previously disadvantaged institutions, because some of those courses that they do, they don't resonate with what you stand for. Because if you were really serious about transformation, there would be engagement. As I've seen NRF, you have taken a stand to try to enhance the mathematics the people to be inclined in understanding math and all that, right? But the transformation shouldn't be only limited to that. Let us internalize a transformation to a point where we really understand the content that we are offering, because we might be in a situation where we think that we are getting correct researchers, and we are getting people who are being misinformed because of the kind of education or curricula that they get. Transformation should also look into that, the curriculum that we continue to get. Why is it that, that brings me to the last question, why is it that ESCOM is in a serious deep tatters that it is today? But we have progressive entities like your CSIR, your NRF, where they can sit and formulate, you know, they can table some progressive proposals on how we can resolve issues that ESCOM is facing. Clearly, they are not complex. Clearly, they just need a well-thought, researched way of doing things, right? So that we resolve whatever is happening in that entity of ESCOM. But as it stands, it won't assist to always speak about, you know, finer things. I mean, avocados not perishing. Yes, it's a very important aspect, agriculturally and all that. We agree. But let us look into a bigger picture. We said here yesterday that let us be overambitious. Let us be overambitious. There are a lot of young people out there that we personally know, who are from universities, we know them. People who have ideas on how they can rescue ESCOM itself, right? But that person perhaps is he or she studying at Solplatje University. Solplatje is not even there. It's not even raised there. Right? That student is there, has all necessary skills and, you know, brains to come up with, solutions to rescue your Transnet, your Prasa, and all that. The question, there's another thing that troubles our nation, which is corruption. What is it that these research organizations are doing to curb corruption in our country? Because I believe researchers should be in it by now, because we are being told CSIR existed 70-something years ago. And I hope and very confident that by now we could have been having something concrete on how we curb corruption, especially in the public institutions, together with the state-owned entities.
As you wrap up, let me close it there, because I want to... Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Ngau.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'll try to pick up on the remnants only. I want to go back to CSIR. I want to go back to page 4, the question which was asked. I will only take it further where I think it did not actually reach that limit. You see, we have those percentages that have been given, the black South African 62%. The question asked was, what about the other 38? Fine. I want to take it further with the 36% female South Africans. What is it that we were not given? And what is of great importance to me, you saying 62% black South Africans, and when it comes to female, 36% to say female South Africans, you don't tell us whether that's still black, or maybe it's vague, if maybe we could be taken through those specifics. The question was asked. I don't want to belabor that point, therefore. I would like to just hear CSIR again on one point that was not asked. The issue of the protection of the rhinos. You limited yourself to Kruger National Park, and you're saying that's a big issue, rhino poaching. And you're saying the Department of Agriculture, I think you said so, is going to be taking over, is going to be getting on board. My question is, what has been the problem? Is the problem the issue of money, finances, or maybe it's because you could not cope with producing the whatever equipment that is necessary? I'll just end it there, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sibiya.
No, I thought you had mistaken
Ngobo for Sibiya. I'm very sorry about that.
Oh, okay. No, I know the Sibiya and Ngobo, they might be related. You are both from KZN.
Yeah.
So.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks for my presentation. Both of them.
Not exactly. Okay.
Oh.
We don't know that one. You can't say that because you are from the Eastern Cape, not from KZN. Okay.
Thanks for both presentations. We NCRF. They have said there is a planning, but excludes the people. Was it done purposely or because of the technology? There is a diagram there which says that the people were excluded. Why were excluded? We, CSIR, you are talking about municipalities. Who are those municipalities? The other one is you didn't met the target. Why the target was not met? Why irregular? You have said there is an irregular expenditure. Is it because of the human capital or CASA? Thank you, Chief.
Okay, thank you. Hope you got the question. Honorable Mukacha.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think, you know, the documents, the slides, ought to be understood without your articulation. NRF and CSIR. Because I think when you spoke on... I think it's NRF, when you spoke to the issue of gender, I heard you say that we missed our target, and you know, but when I went to the slide and tried to look at it on my own, I couldn't make sense of it on my own. So I think when you put together your documents, ensure that they are self-explanatory. So without you having to articulate what's on the slide, one can understand it on their own. I think that's an easier way of also just dealing with the issues that a lot of people are, or the sentiments that a lot of people are raising. I just like clarity between the youth-funded bursary from CSIR, the youth-funded bursary vis-a-vis the... Also, you must explain something to us. You know, when we are in our meetings, Chair, our phones, our gadgets, our tablets, all of these things, Siri picks up while we're speaking. Both my phones just... I didn't say Siri, but both of them have just lit up. So maybe also people can explain that, you know, in between your researchers, you know. So the difference between the youth-funded bursary and the CSIR-managed and funded bursary. Of course, without reiterating what Honorable Gieti has said, but it's very fundamental that there is a fair distribution of funds and attention between historically black or historically disadvantaged institutions and your WITS, your UCT, your Rhodes. The numbers there don't look good at all. The polarization between what you're giving to, this is CSIR, I think, what you're giving to UP and what you're giving to SMU is huge. Right, and SMU is not even in the same bracket as you would put a uni then, for example. And also what I'm noting, coming from Pretoria, raised in Pretoria, I'm noticing that a lot of your students are coming from UP. And is that due to the proximity of the institution to your main campus? So how do you decentralize your funding and reach out to more institutions across the country? TVET, all right? So you've mentioned TVET on page 20. What exactly are you doing with TVET? And that question also goes to your community colleges. You speak of a work integrated learning. Are you taking your TVET students into that? How many are you taking? How many institutions are you working with? This particular administration or this committee under this sixth administration is very interested in ensuring that we level out institutions of higher learning from universities to historically black institutions to TVET and to community colleges, and sort of allowing for young people not to view particular institutions as better off. And these numbers, so when a young person sees that UP gets more funding from CSIR than a UniVen, of course they're going to want to go to UniVen. We need to allow for equal opportunity so that young people can also look at the institutions with an equal eye. When it comes to safety and security, I mean, it's not here, but I'm just trying to, I'm interested in how, if there is any RDIs that are geared towards addressing the gender-based violence and femicide scourge in society, and if they are, could you share, you know, what those RDIs are? And also, I have a dream that one day none of us have to carry IDs. We can just put our finger somewhere, and everyone will be, it's like whichever institution I'm working with at that particular point in time, will be able to capture all my information. Is there anything that is linked to that in terms of the research you're doing that might not be covered in your annual report, particularly when it comes to something we're trying to address as a committee, which is we want to do away with indigent students perpetually having to prove how poor they are because you must always provide all these documents. So if I don't know if there's any research that's being done or innovations that are being done towards a system that could... that could create this ideal world where we don't have to consistently prove our indigency or we don't have to carry around an ID book. I also think... that one's okay. I'm so sorry, Chair. I know I'm all over the place. I think I'd like to appreciate also the gendered eye that is present, particularly in the document provided by NRF. Of course, it is lacking in terms of further, you know, breaking down, but there is an intention to speak about the gender dynamics in this space. So I do appreciate that, but of course, take into consideration the shortfalls that everyone has already articulated. I also appreciate NRF at your acknowledgement of a wraparound system for students, so making sure that, because you spoke earlier on to the fact that you don't have as many applicants for postgrad, which for me as a former student leader, automatically I thought of the fact that people aren't actually making it through the system because you don't have the particular resources that protect you to make it through the system. So that acknowledgement is very important, especially because you're also working with NASA to try and address those things. So I think I must acknowledge that. I think I'm covered. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. I hope you've got the question. I think from myself, on the Auditor General's report, and maybe I must first start by thanking both of you, CSIR and NRF, for obtaining unqualified report, audit reports or audit opinions. CSIR, the clean audit, congratulations. NRF with the unqualified but with findings, congratulations. We hope that you'll deal with those findings, which are in the main two issues that I've seen on wasteful and fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 6,000 for NRF. So the 4,000 the Auditor General says was for the interest, and the 2,000 was for the misflight. And still on NRF, there is an irregular expenditure that relates to non-compliance in relation to deviations, expansion variation orders, and tax verification process prior to award, which is an irregular expenditure. But I think in the main, the auditor says that you are doing well, except those two findings. And CSIR, there is something here that I do not understand. The irregular expenditure to the value of 6.32 million, of which 5.70 million relates to the current year and 0.62 million has been identified in the current year but relates to the prior year. So all irregular expenditure is as a result of non-compliance with supply chain management regulations. Can you please give us an explanation of this irregular expenditure? It's quite high of 6.32 million. Give us the details of that irregular expenditure. I thought that because of this finding, which might be material finding, this was going to be a finding. So you're going to have an unqualified audit opinion, but with the findings that relates to this irregular expenditure, but surprisingly, we have got a very clean audit. I don't know how clean it is when there is this irregular expenditure. So please, can you explain this particular one? And then on, you also had a finding on fruitless and wasteful expenditure, a finding of 95,000.
73,000 rands was incurred due to settlement of an employee's liability for recruitment fee. Okay, this one is explained here, so you don't have to explain it. So please just explain to me that part on the 6.2 million. And then on page 21, something that Honorable Mukacho also mentioned, there is a partnership between the CSIR and the MESIDA that talks to the curriculum of TVET colleges. I would like you to expand on this one, because one of the issues that we have been grappling with as a committee, brief as we are in this portfolio committee, has been the issue of the relevance of the curriculum of TVET colleges to the market. We're producing students, I don't know whether to call them graduates, from TVET, and whatever that we are trained in them, they may not be relevant to the market. So it's quite an exciting partnership. I would like you to expand on it so that we can understand exactly what does this mean, this partnership, and how is it going to be relevant to what we are trying to achieve with the TVET College, to train the artisans and people who are going to be technical, and their technical training should be relevant to the market. So that will be that. But overall, I think I'm fine with the presentation, except that maybe in future from NRF, as you come and present your annual reports, maybe just, I understand the highlights. It's very important to understand, because you are taking us through a journey, you know, of what you are funding, the research that you are assisting, but also try to be more relevant to the APP. Because initially you develop an annual performance plan and then you come and report on it. So in the annual performance plan you'll say, this will be my target, this will be my baseline. So as you come and report, please try and also be relevant to the APP so that you can have a picture of what you plan to achieve, what you achieve. Besides the highlights, it's important to give us the highlights. We like... In fact, it was quite very inspiring to listen to the presentation. But as Honorable Nodada was saying, we need to get a sense of what you said you're going to do and then whether you achieved it or you did not achieve it and how you didn't achieve that. That is for the future, but for today, you know, you presented it how you presented, but I think you get a sense of what we would like to find from yourself. Okay. should we start with CSIR? They requested to leave. So we said we're going to release them during lunchtime. So let's start with you.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the comments that you've made. I will give it the first step. Some of the questions I'll respond to and then allow the GEs to come in and perhaps give the more nuanced response to some of these questions. Starting with your questions, Chair, the ones on irregular expenditure, particularly pertinent to the AG's report, I'll allow the CFO to deal with all of those. In fact, most of them are for the CFO, except for the one on the CSIR and MESITA partnership. And the GEHR is going to talk to those. But going through the questions now, one at a time, Honorable Manani so spoke about the finer granularity of the, or I'll say granular discretization of the demographics, instead of simply saying black, what about the white? But in a nutshell, because we've asked this question at board level as well, where it's not South African black, just black, that would refer to both South African blacks and blacks from diaspora. So black for us means Indian, colored, and African. That's black. So anything else would be white. So when we say South African black, that would be South African Indian, South African colored, and South African African. That's what it is. So where it's just black, where the percentage is given as black, the balance would automatically be white in that case. So, but there's an issue that you raise about the youth and the people with disabilities. I think there we would need to play a better focus. As far as I can tell, we have not specifically isolated that cohort of the youth in particular and people with disabilities. But if there is a need to do so, we can do so, because we strongly believe that that's also an area that we must pay attention to. And then on the issue of putting everything in African languages, I would like the GE, Dr. Motodi Maselumo, to respond to that. But it's always difficult to talk science in Zulu. I'm still trying to do it myself. But we'll try, perhaps, to achieve that goal at some point. I think it's important, at least at a certain level, to pay attention to that as well, so that we reach a wider audience. And then Honorable Boshoff raised a very, very key question here. 2 weeks ago, the CEO of NRF was there. We had a meeting with the minister where he met all the CEOs of councils and chairpersons of councils. And very, very interesting, this question came up of subsidy, research subsidy. In the past, most of that subsidy came from, in fact, all of it came from the Department of Higher Education and Training for research. So if you had the CSIR, for example, despite the fact that you are contributing in a very similar way, you would not be eligible for that subsidy. And then we see this measure of higher education and science and innovation as an advantage in that regard, because then it means there will be no excuse whatsoever, because they're now both under the same roof as to why someone in the research councils would not qualify for the same kind of subsidy. And the response we got from DSIDG, by the way, was very positive. Apparently DSI is already looking into that. And they are not only going to be looking at papers published in journals, but they're also going to be looking at patents that are filed. That is the response that we got. I think that answers that question there. And then on Honorable Nodada, I think those questions really also pertain to both the CFO as to why the targets were not met, and I think also they are very much in line with what the Chair has asked as well. And then working with the HDIs, that question has come up a few times. You'll see in the slide that we do work with the HDIs, but I would like the GEHR to know once why it's mainly the previously advantage, if I may call it, that institutions that are funded or that we seem to be working more with instead of the previously or historically disadvantaged institutions. And again, the issue, still talking to Honorable Nodata, the issue of the tendering process came out again 2 weeks ago when we were speaking with the minister, and again last week when we met the minister as the CSIR. It's an issue that we strongly believe is now in the hands of our political heads in dealing with National Treasury, looking at whether we do have to tender as well, even for some of our key capabilities or core capabilities, because we strongly believe that that is really not necessary. Because some of the activities that we conduct are strictly of national interest, and you'd want CSIR as a specific entity formed for a particular purpose to be the one that conducts some of these activities. So it's a matter that has been lingering on for 4 years now. We dealt with this matter with the Minister, Dr. Naledi Pandor. We also raised this with the the Honorable Minister, Mamlogo Kubayi Ngubane. We also raised this now with our Minister, Dr. Nzimande. So we cannot say at this stage where that lies, but we strongly believe that with our political heads now involved, perhaps there could be some arrangements made in that regard. And then, Honorable Kiese, you spoke about the impact the CSIR has had on the industrial development. I think Dr. Masaru Mule did speak to that slide in detail, but he can also do the same. Dr. Masaru Mule is going to talk in detail to that slide. We did give the figures in terms of how many industries we formed. It's mainly the SMEs that where we've played a key role via our national facilities like BIDF, for example, and BIDC. So we've formed a few SMMEs, where we might have to play a bigger role perhaps will be in the expansion of existing industries, particularly the bigger industries. And then you spoke about the criteria for students. I'll allow the GE for HR to deal with that as to how we decide which students we find. Honorable Ngobo, I think your question has been answered. I think it's very, very similar to the question that was asked by Honorable Mananiso on the digitization of the demographics as to how we account for our demographics. And then Honorable Sibiya spoke about the municipalities. I'll allow the Dr. Masaru Mule to deal with that as to which municipalities we are working with. And then Honorable Mkajwa really raised issues really on the funding. Most of the questions raised by Honorable Mkajwa really relate to our GEHR. So he will deal with those, except for the one on the use of biometrics instead of physical documentation. I think that's a very, very good question. We are doing a lot of work in that area, and I think it's not only for students, but it's across the board. I mean, wherever you go, even at passport control, is the same thing. So the use of biometrics actually is something that we need to focus on, and I think there's work that we are doing in that regard. Dr. Masad Mule is going to talk at large about that. I think I've covered all the questions from my side. I'll just perhaps start off with the GEHR to respond.
Thank you, Chair. Just to first touch on the issue of the transformation agenda. So the CSIR approaches the transformation agenda in a holistic manner, right? And what we've reported here, right, it's basically what's been tracked, right, as part of the shareholder compact. So we would have, I think in future, right, when we do this presentation, we can then present, right, the full picture, right, instead of focusing, right, on the shareholder compact. Then touching on the some of the specifics, so in terms of the youth within the CSIR is a young organization. So if we look at the percentage, right, we're sitting at 68%. So, and then in terms of people with disability, right, we're sitting at 2%. And we're saying as CSIR we can do more. So recently the EXCO, right, approved, right, a YES program, right, where in January we'll be bringing in 66 students or youth. Right, and we said 20%, right, of those should be people with disability. Right, so that talks to the question of the numbers. And then the other one is in terms of the black female. So here it's in terms of the set. So black females, we're talking 24.8%, right, within the CSIR. Then let's move on and look at the programs. So in terms of the criteria, right, that we've used. So the criteria basically that has been used is simple. It's looking at SET, so science, engineering, and technology. And what we've found is in terms of the previously disadvantaged universities, right, in terms of the science and engineering, right, they are not strong. However, what we've done, right, we've put in programs in place, right, to help to strengthen, right, the universities, especially the previous cities advantage, looking at the technology part. So, as an example, right, University of Venda, right, we've got a dedicated program, right, that we run with them in terms of upskilling, right, and in terms looking at the technology aspect. The University of Western Cape, the University of Northwest, the Mafeking campus, and as well as specifically the Sol Plaatje University. So those we've got programs that we run with them, where we've got our researchers and professionals spending time, right, to ensure that we deal, right, with the issue, right, of the technology curriculum. And in future, we'll see the numbers, right, increasing in that space. So that then looking at the difference, right, between the CSIR youth-funded program and the DSI-funded program. So the difference there is purely where the CSIR funded is from this CSIR PG, right, where we allocate funds, right, for training. And then the DSI, those are the funds that come from DSI and the CSIR. We then manage that program for DSI. So, Doctor, you want to touch on the Mercita? The management?
All right, thank you. No, so maybe in terms of the universities, I'll just add another nuance to that. What criteria? So the ACSIR or A Science Council has certain base capabilities. So you'll notice universities that have a strong engineering base. They train just about as a collective all the engineers. A lot of the historically disadvantaged universities will not have that capacity. So if we're looking for an engineer, we wouldn't go to University of Limpopo, for instance. So there is a certain inbuilt pre-selection that is an area that has a strong engineering emphasis. By the way, I mean when I was going to school, going to West will have been a serious issue. It's not a serious issue anymore. Or going to UP. So the transformation base, the 62% transformation base tells you that even though we might be getting a lot of students from UP, they're largely black students. So it's not the pre-selection does not presuppose a certain racial profile. But these universities are strong in terms of the engineering capacity. So and even in the applied sciences. So until the bigger system is empowered to produce in a distributed way across the board, you will find that when we look for physicists, for instance, we will typically go to the University of Limpopo. Professor Ngwepe has a very strong program there, and other areas. But when we're looking for electronic engineers, there are only a certain good number of universities. You're Stellenbosch, University of Pretoria, and so forth. But that capability is what is aligned to the business, is aligned to that industrialization impact that we're pushing through. And we encourage the universities as well to transform as much as possible. So on the MIA-CETA, the MIA-CETA initiative is very specific. So the MIA-CETA approached the CSR to develop a factory of the future, so a training factory of the future. So here what we are looking at are 4IR type technologies that cut across several industries. So what is happening is we're going to be a reference factory of the future will be developed at the CSIR. And that reference facility will then be duplicated at TVS colleges. So this needs to be aligned with industry to cut down on people being trained and not being taken up by industry. So we are very excited by that, and there will be a very good collaboration with the TVS as well. And the Department of Education in terms of making sure that there is proper alignment to the skills that the economy requires and will require in the advent of the 4IR, and also introducing some of what we have learned over the years within the CSR environment. So we are really very excited about this type of initiative. Yeah. Okay, now. The chair has delegated to me to talk about the issue of African languages. I think what we have done or are doing is try to the major publications like the annual report get to a point where we rotate some of the languages. So in one year will try as much as possible to have that annual report published in Zulu, and the following year in Sepedi, and another year in Tshivenda, to rotate. Like, we don't have resources to be able to publish, you know, some of these things in all the languages at the same time. But as well, I think our chairman of the board's view that doing science, doing engineering in Zulu is much a challenge to him. It's a challenge for me to doing mathematics in Sepedi. So I think there is a responsibility for bigger, broader society to develop these languages to a point where they can capture the technical vocabulary that exists in science and engineering, and I think we can take a leaf out of some of the work that is done in terms of making Afrikaans a very technical language. If you look in that, you realize that there is a lot of work that goes into making sure that the technical terms are updated regularly. So we do have a template, I think, there that we can copy and make sure that the other languages are really empowered to be able to have this vocabulary. And this will make the aspiration to teach kids early in different areas quite closer to home, which is what we require. But empowering these languages to have the vocabulary, I think, will be good. As it stands now, we don't have the resources to embark on some of these bigger initiatives. Now, the issue of identity management. By the way, the current smart card was developed at the CSR. With the collaboration of the Department of Home Affairs, and we have a very strong specialty in identity management. So the issue of biometrics, different biometrics, the iris, the fingerprints. Actually, we've developed technologies that can acquire a fingerprint from the lower epidermis. So if the upper skin is damaged, we will be able to use a laser to acquire the fingerprint from the lower bit. So we do have very intense technological capability. Of course, the issue of modalities to manage identity is still the prerogative and the prerogative of government. So government has to say this should be done. We can then offer very full support as we are doing now. So what you're describing is not something that is out is out there. It's out of the ordinary. Actually, we are there. It can be implemented, but we take orders from the state. It's not our province.
Okay.
Right. Thank you.
Done?
All right.
Okay. Let's move a bit quicker.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. So the questions that I'll be addressing will be why we didn't meet our financial targets and some information around the irregular expenditure. So as we noted, the top line we didn't meet by about 185 million, and that came from our contract R&D. And that is linked to a couple of things. So one thing is, in fact, the tendering process. So you did ask around what specific opportunities did we miss and what was the impact. So just to give you an idea of some of the opportunities that we missed quite a lot of work with Transnet, where we actually do have a special locomotive conditioning monitoring system, which is what we offer, and it's a specialized offering. The impact of not being able to get those contracts signed was that we weren't able to deliver that service in that year. So we did follow a tendering process, and we did win the tender, but it rolled over into a delayed offering, which meant that Transnet suffered, and so did the CSIR from a financial perspective. Another example, we in fact did have something to do with Eskom, which we weren't able to do. There were a few municipalities that we had specific services around water quality and different water initiatives that we were not able to do. And also there was, we actually had an MOA with DAF for 30 million rand to incubate SMME technologies in their space, which we had to put on tender, and that actually just fell off the table in the end. So those SMEs didn't actually get that incubation. Those are just some of the examples. So this is a challenge for us. Whilst I'm on the topic of municipalities, you did ask also around which municipalities we're currently doing business with. And I think one of the major one is the municipality of Ethekwini Municipality. We're also doing some work with City of Joburg as some of the major ones. But there are a number that we do smaller projects with. So we've done quite a lot of work with the municipalities. In terms of the irregular expenditure, so a lot of it is around specialized services. In particular, legal services, where we generally go out on tender to have sort of contractors that we can use for a certain period of time. And then in some instances, in some of the regular expenditure, that three-year period had actually terminated, but the people who placed the orders weren't aware that that was terminated, so they didn't follow the proper process. Some of the bigger ones was around 1.4 million rand, where we did not follow a proper procurement process for Sea Technology Services, where we needed their assistance in a certain project. And I think, again, it's around awareness, around what should be a single supplier, what should be a sole supplier, and what process should we follow in order to correctly procure these services. So, as I mentioned, we've now included those.
Can I help you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You've got a figure of 6.2 million, which is regular expenditure.
Yes.
So you must say 2 million was for this.
Okay.
1 million was for this. Don't say some of it maybe was equals.
Okay.
This is something that has happened, and you are supposed to disclose it in your... in the notes to the financial statement.
Okay.
So just read what the notes are saying, because I haven't had time to to go through the notes to your financial statement.
Okay, so the detail behind the notes, 49,000 Rand was for Deloitte and Touche, 30,000 Rand was for Blind Overt Blinds, 61,000 Rand was for PBT or PTB, I'm not sure if that's abbreviation, 51,000 for the South African Institute for Foundrymen, 28,000 for George Favers. That was because there was a deviation on their order, which was more than 15%. 34,000 for Spur and Fisher, 51,000 for Robin Banks, 46,000 for Stegmans Incorporated, 74,000 for Nileti Consulting, and another 209,000 for Nileti Consulting, 2.7 million for Vakman's attorneys, 1.4 million for Sea Technology Services, and 920,000 for Haldanais Malarkey is the list. But that specifically makes up 5.7 million, and then the 620,000 that was separately disclosed in the audited financial statement.
So that was for the contract for legal services?
The 620,000. No, the legal services was...
No, no, for 5.7 million, what was it for?
Pardon me?
You said it's for legal services?
No,
2.7
was for legal services, and then a few of the smaller amounts,
okay,
like the 30,000 and the... 40,000 for Spur and Fisher and Miller, a few of the other ones. And then 1.4 was for Sea Technology Services, which is a specialized service that we use, but the proper process wasn't followed for that.
Okay. All right. So those were findings, but you had a clean audit.
Yeah, there was no loss to the CSIR from any of the irregular expenditure, which doesn't excuse it, but we really need to work on
this. Okay. But the finding doesn't mean that there was a material
yeah.
loss It simply means that you did not comply fully with the processes.
Yes.
But you got lucky this time around. I don't know whether you will be lucky again next day.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Can we? Are we done with the? Yeah, we are done. Let's get the responses from NRF.
Chairperson, in the interest of time, and because the difficult questions, as I said earlier, will be answered by my colleagues. I'll ask my colleague, Dr. Patio Matutu. Oh.
Honorable Chairperson, I do realize that somebody is owing me a response. He indicated so.
He owes you a response. Okay, let's get the response.
Yeah. So there was a question on the on rhino poaching.
Okay.
That we Honorable Norbert did ask and we didn't respond to. So the technology has been it has been in the Kruger National Park for quite some time. So the issue of resources is on the Department of Environmental Affairs side. I think they need more resources to have more of these technologies, actually not just in the Kruger National Park, but in other areas doing that. So what we are trying to do is to commercialize the technology so that we are bringing the cost down so that it might be affordable for even for users even beyond the department, because we have private parks that have very important animals to protect and actually for security applications this thing is applicable. You're talking Transnet, TRASA and all of those folks. So the commercialization will make it possible for better distribution. But the lag is not on our side. Is the funding on the side of the state.
Okay, thank you. CEO.
Chairperson, thank you. And like I said earlier, in the interest of time, I'll ask my colleagues just to help me as briefly as possible. So I'll ask Dr. Petiwe Matutu, Chairperson, to assist with regard to our transformation framework, how we approach transformation, as well as the relationship between ourselves and as the National Student Financial Aid Scheme and how that works. Mr. Bishan Singh, our Chief Financial Officer Chair, reflecting on the reasons for not meeting targets, whether it was AG issues, it was funding issues, etc., as well as the comments that you made around the audit report, Chairperson. Dr. Rob Adam, to help us in terms of some of the issues that I think the Honorable Ketse was raising regarding national research facilities, their operations, and what benefits to society we have had. And maybe the Honorable Mkhatshwa has gone, but he's a physicist, so he was able to respond to why the phones were buzzing and raising. And I don't know, but maybe he knows something that I don't. But and then our chairperson will then close off on issues that may have not been covered. But allow me, with your permission, Chair, to appreciate and welcome hugely all the comments, and we really appreciate and embrace all the comments, particularly the challenges that you put in front of us. We also now know how best to present to you in the manner in which you would want the presentation. We also would be grateful for you to visit us, get a sense of what we do, because there is an enormous volume. We don't want to deluge our committee with mountains of paper and presentations, but I think it's important. And so I just want to make two short comments, maybe two and a half. The one is around the use of indigenous African languages. We fully support the idea. And what we do is we use indigenous African languages, particularly when we do science engagement. So to talk about astronomy in Setswana, we talk in astronomy in Xhosa or in Sesotho or whatever the case may be. So we even give, because astronomy is something that all of humanity has known, and all of us in different societies will relate to those in our own cultures and in our own languages. So we use indigenous African languages when we do our science engagement. The second is that we also support researchers who undertake research to look at how a language can also improve, particularly education of science. So Professor Pakeng, by way of example, that's a speciality, Mamukheti. It's about language in the training of mathematics and mathematics teachers. And then lastly, it's about the development of our own indigenous languages, the research about their own development, and so that it is possible for a language to also carry currency in the business of science. And then my second small comment, Chairperson, is to the Honorable Boshoff around the issue of research output subsidy. You will recall, Chair, that subsidy at universities comes in three parts: input subsidy, output subsidy, and earmarked. So the money that is allocated to higher education is cut up in those three portions. So the output subsidy is split into two: the graduates that universities produce, and then the research output subsidy. And that research output subsidy is masters, research masters, doctorates, and publication outputs. And so here we were talking about publication outputs. And so this is money appropriated to the Department of Higher Education Training for the university system and not necessarily for the other parts of the science system. However, part of what we have done, at least in the NRF, we have used our own money to encourage performance of researchers within the National Research Foundation using a similar kind of model and not necessarily asking the Department of Higher Education and Training to subsidize the research that is actually happening. But Chair, let me pause there and maybe ask Dr. Matutu to start, and then Mr. Singh and Dr. Adam, and then our Chair will then do the honors of closing. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Dr. Matutu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable members, on the issue of transformation, because it's so central to the work of the organization, we have a transformation framework which starts to analyze more than just a representation of the workforce, the researcher workforce, what it is that we mean by transformation as the National Research Foundation. And it is evidently one of the core areas that our strategy going forward is going to have and has had previously. So, on the researcher workforce, there is the issue of representation. We're talking now racial, gender, people with disabilities, and so on, as per the country's demographic. So it depends on where we're starting from and where we want to be. That is important, because if you have the kind of people who are representative, the kind of research that you are likely to embark on is likely to be representative of the needs of the people in your country. So we have not just left that out for the issue of the research agenda to the people that we have as researchers. The other core element that we consider to matter in transformation is the research enterprise. So by that, we mean that the kind of research that we embark on has to be transformative of the society that we live on, and it has to be representative of the needs that we have as a society. So as a consequence, we are going to be establishing a research agenda as the National Research Foundation, so as to have impactful research that is responsive to the needs of our country as per the NDP and so on. And we're not starting from scratch. Already when the chair was mentioning some of the practical programs that we have, when we talk about a program on communities of practice, it is starting to say we are responding to the needs of the country by having crowding researchers who are working in a particular area, such as the one that we spoke about on poverty, such as the one that we spoke about in the teaching of mathematics, where we have about 6 research chairs working on a common problem there. And then the other element, which is a pillar of this transformation framework, is the science and society, the involvement of society, both in the identification of problems that need to be addressed and at the same time involvement in the process up to the dissemination of the results that we're talking about. So the involvement of the various parts of society is going to be quite a crucial component of the transformation of the research agenda that we're talking about, so as to bring the research closer to society. And finally, looking then at the organization that we want to be, it becomes important that we look at issues of representativity, issues of inclusivity, and how we treat each other within the organization. So all those issues of how youthful our organization is, the organizational culture, are included in that all element. So those 4 areas of the researcher workforce, the research agenda, science and society, and the organization we want to be are the core pillars of our transformation framework as the organization. And we see a relationship between the issues of transformation and impact, the issues of transformation and excellence. Transformation drives excellence. Transformation drives impact.
Okay. So, thank you very much.
Then the last part,
yeah.
Sorry, was the relationship with the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. As mentioned, we are going to, for the first time, focus on financially needy students at postgraduate level. And as Honorable Mkatshwa has mentioned, our intention there is not to, at postgraduate level, get students to prove again that they are poor. We have to dovetail with the NSFAS systems in order to be able to get the appropriate information as evidence that these students were considered poor by the NSFAS so that we can consider them to be poor ourselves. So that is a foregone conclusion of our policy. Our policy is going to consider that. And for that to happen, we need data from NSFAS so that there's a seamless process between them and us. So that relationship, we're busy formalizing it through an agreement as we speak. And we have never focused on financially needy per se, and they have. The experiences that they have at undergraduate level matter for us as data. So the data sharing component, so that we can improve our work as the National Research Foundation, is very important for us. I wouldn't like to belabor the relationship. There are other components of our relationship which will be codified in the agreement. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. What's next?
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. The 2 questions that I will deal with is the performance targets and the irregular expenditure. Chairperson, we acknowledge, I think it is correct to say that the presentation should have had the actuals versus what was projected or targeted. We acknowledge that. However, the details are in our annual report, so we don't entirely skip it in terms of disclosure. By each KPI. There are 2 key elements, Chair, that drives across the KPIs in terms of whether the targets have been met or not. One is, and primary, is that in 2015, when we set our strategy 2020, we set a 5-year target for each of the KPIs. What we then did was we mirrored those targets without changing them in our APPs. when we set those targets, there was a very ambitious assumption that our revenues will grow, and that did not materialize, as you probably would have heard from the CEO, that we've more or less had a flatlined income. So that assumption resulted in us not having sufficient funding for many of our targets. That's the first thing. The second thing that we did was the level of scrutiny since 2015-16, we started to tighten up our what we call the technical indicator descriptions, your TIDs that the Auditor General audits. What we then did was, and it's an error on our part, we acknowledge that. We kept the targets the same as of 2015, but then we tightened the indicator description, which meant that many of those things that we would have counted in the original budget, we now remove them. For example, and there's many examples, number of users of national facilities, where in the original targets we included students that we funded financially, plus the actual users of the facility. Now, when we tightened up the technical indicator description, we removed students that we funded, and we only kept those students that physically used a national facility. So those were the two things that led to many of the variances. Funding was one, and the change of the technical indicator description. Chair, what I must say, and members, is that we changed that this year. We made sure that we obtained ministerial approval when we submitted our APP for this year, and we then aligned the technical indicator description to the targets. And I hope that that will deal with it going forward. Chair, with regard to, and honourable members, the question is very relevant with regard to the irregular expenditure. I've learned today through your questioning, Chairperson, that maybe the AG has different views in dealing with different organisations. Whilst the CSIR has 6 million rand irregular expenditure and gets a clean audit, the NRF has 4 million rand irregular expenditure and doesn't get a clean audit. It's perhaps what my CEO was saying earlier on, that we still have an issue and a bone to pick with the AG on some of these things. But nonetheless, let me explain, Chair, that there are two items in particular, as you asked the CSIR of the details, there are two items in particular that makes up the bigger chunk of the 4.3 million rand. One is we unfortunately had a fallout in terms of a lease that we signed. We signed a lease to move the SKA offices from Pinelands through to Black River Park. What had happened when we signed the lease, the owners of the premises accepted that we could move in at a particular period of time. They came back once it was approved and they said to us, we now have CETA, the State Information Technology, occupying those buildings. They are more important than you, and we cannot move them out of the premises while the lease had expired. So we then had to stay on in the existing building that we were in. We had to renegotiate a deal with, I think Rob is calling it Parioli Building here in Pinelands, renegotiate a deal and backdate that deal to stay on in that building. So it's a timing issue that tripped us, Chair. Unfortunately, this is not something that we planned for. It happened. We relented on the deal that we signed with Black River Park Investments, and we stayed on until another 6 months in our old building, which the AG then indicated that we had not obtained. And this is where technicality trips us. We had not obtained prior approval. The way irregular expenditure in terms of deviation says you must obtain prior approval for deviation. In this case, we didn't. And it so happened that the circumstances led us into this particular situation. The second thing, Chair, was that we had a cleaning and security contract at our building in Didacta in Pretoria, where we do science engagement, that expired. We then went out on a tender process which didn't yield the desired results. What we then did was we went on a month-on-month procurement of the services. So the AG says you went on a quotation basis. whilst you should have gone out on a tender. We said to the AG, but we went out on a tender. It did not yield the desired results. As a result, we'll have to relook at the specifications and re-advertise the tender. Their argument is that because the amount exceeds 500,000 rand, it should have gone out on a tender, and you should not have gone out on a quotation. Yet again, is a technicality in terms of how we dealt with the thing. In both the cases, Chair, we certainly didn't lose any money. It is irregular in terms of not having complied with the Treasury instructions. What I can share with you, Chair, is that we've gone through quite a massive exercise, and honorable members, in the NRF to educate our people to be careful of these minor things that could trip us. I'm saying minor because it is a matter of interpretation. It's not where you willfully go and incur irregular expenditure. In so doing, what I want to share with the members is that year to date, we're half year down the line, the NRF has had zero irregular expenditure up to now, and we hope that we can conclude the year on the same note. What I also want to say is that in both the cases, the AG did not find, and in the other cases, the AG did not pick up any of this irregular expenditure, and that shows that our systems internally picked up 100% of these items. However, we then started arguing with the AG in terms of whether it's irregular, whether it's not irregular, but at the end of the day, we conceded. Unfortunately, we lost our clean award, but that, as it may be the case, we've learned a hard lesson going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Chair of the Board? Oh, Dr.
This is a very broad question, and I notice that the asker of the question appears not to be present, but I'll continue and answer it anyway. And that is really the reason for choosing particular national facilities. How did you get to that thing? And then also, how does one benefit from their existence? And the term benefit is there from a research perspective, but also from an economic benefit perspective. Now, if we cast our minds back to South Africa in the mid-1990s, we had come out of a period of economic and academic boycott sanctions. And so we had, those of us that were in that position, to advise on the choice of research directions. One of the questions we asked ourselves was, if you are sitting in a well-resourced research system, probably in the Northern Hemisphere, and you looked at South Africa, and you asked yourself the question, what am I interested in that place now that it's open? What would I invest in? And so we came up with a number of areas, and I won't go into all of them, but I'll just mention two or three. One of them was astronomy. And what we've seen in Chile and Australia and other parts of the world was that those countries had been able to use their empty spaces to attract science investment that requires those empty spaces. And so you were able to get, in Chile, for example, multi-billion dollar science infrastructure simply because there is a desert there, there is no light pollution, and also it's in the southern hemisphere, and if you think about this, if you're in the northern hemisphere, it sounds like a cliche, but you can't see through the earth, and so you need a southern observatory as well to partner what you can see in the north. And so what we reasoned was that we could position South Africa as a region of the, and Southern Africa as a region of the globe which could attract those investments. And ultimately it's been proven to be correct. We have managed to attract them. Another area we looked at was HIV and AIDS, because certainly in those days and even now, for our society, it's a colossal problem. But if you are in a research system elsewhere, apart from recognizing it as a problem, you would recognize it as an interesting area to research if you're a medical researcher. And Dr. Olive Shoshana was in that at that stage, and she's now come back as the one of the key thinkers behind the NHI. She was able to attract huge amounts of investment in international HIV/AIDS-directed research money to South Africa simply by highlighting that this was possible. And then the other area, and this is particularly applicable to the NRF, I think, is radioisotope production. You've heard of the SA Isotopes facility, and there's been money which has been granted recently for the establishment of that facility. Now, in a sense, when we came out of apartheid, there was a strong nuclear establishment. And one of the ideas we had was to use that nuclear knowledge for a peace dividend. In other words, you take the facilities, they were there at Itemba Labs and also at Pelindaba, the Nuclear Energy Corporation. And those facilities were, in a sense, converted to manufacture medical radioisotopes. So, you know, South Africa was the first country in history to unilaterally walk away from nuclear armament. And on top of that, we were able to turn that around, and certainly at Nexa, we're able to become one of the greatest manufacturers of medical radioisotopes in the world. And then similarly, the idea was to do the same at Itemba. So I've taken three examples here, where one is a geographic advantage, astronomy. The other one is an advantage of a particular medical condition that's pervasive in the society. And the third is a knowledge advantage, and how those were turned into research, investment, attraction, stimulants for the country. How have we actually benefited? Well, you know, if you look at them, again, this is one that I know fairly well, obviously, being where I am. Take the Meerkat telescope. Roughly, and I don't have the exact figure at my fingertips, but let's say it's 3 billion rand, which was spent on the Meerkat telescope. 75% of that was sourced locally, in terms of manufacture, in terms of installation, design, labor, etc. So there's been already that benefit to the economy. From an ongoing perspective, you have, of course, the issue of maintenance. I mentioned yesterday to the same committee that 10% of the capital cost of a large telescope gets spent per annum on operating, including maintenance. So there's that feedback loop into the engineering sector, but also into catering, transport, fuel, etc., etc. Significant work opportunities have been created in the Northern Cape already. Of course, there are certainly comments that one has removed money out of the sheep farming economy, but I would argue that you've put more back elsewhere. But that's, of course, an ongoing discussion. Also, there are high-tech spin-offs. One of them, and rhino poaching was mentioned earlier. One of the technologies that's come out of Meerkat has been the fact that we need to be able to detect aircraft, particularly private aircraft that may not be scheduled, flying close to the antennas, because the radio frequency interference from those aircraft can break the receivers. And so we need to be able to detect this early, be able to contact air traffic control and say, look, can you talk to those guys and tell them to fly somewhere else, please? And so we obviously couldn't use radar. And so what we were able to do, working with the private sector, was to develop a technology which used ordinary FM radio broadcasts. So this was an innovation based on our requirements, which will be spun off into other sectors. And I mentioned rhino poaching. Well, obviously, if poachers are flying in a light aircraft and you can pick them up not through having to put radar in place, but being able to, with receivers, pick this up from ordinary radio broadcasts, which are amplified and the signal is matched against what signal bounces off the aircraft, that's a huge step forward, because you're effectively you're effective wherever there's a radio broadcast. So that's just an example of a spin-off that goes into ordinary industry and has more broad application than simply radio astronomy. I mean, one of the questions also was about partnerships with institutions. I mean, one of the issues you face with the
Doc,
key...
I know you can talk, you can go on and on. We do not have enough time.
Okay.
I think
no
we,
problem.
You did answer the question of Honorable Gates, and you have been very helpful. Let's adjourn and give to the chair to do the closing comment.
Okay. Honorable Chair and also the members of the committee, thank you very much. This has been a very fruitful engagement, and especially that this is our first time really engaging with the committee. We really appreciate, you know, this engagement, and also to highlight some of the challenges and the concerns that we've had, and also the expectations going forward as we put together our reports. And I think what we're taking is that, you know, alignment of the APP and also our report going forward as we report on our performance. And just to touch briefly, as one of the honourable raised the question on the comprehensive register on the beneficiaries that we've taken note of, and we'll be able to provide that information, and also the tracking of our, you know, the people that we are funding. I think that is an issue that also for us as a board, we hold it very close to our heart, because that is an issue that we have raised, and we're engaging with the executive to ensure that there is a return on the investment that we make as NRF. So lastly, just to really thank the chair and also the committee for this engagement, and also that we are looking forward to further engagement, especially now that we are completing our next strategy document, and we'll be happy to present that going forward. Yeah. Thank you very much, Shane.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair and the CEO and the team. We were not able to come to the awards, but we did ask Honorable Gaze to represent us. I hope he has represented us well there. Oh, he didn't pitch up.
I had a condition of going there, so it was not met. Unfortunately, we couldn't attend.
Oh, okay. No, I thought we're well represented. It's only now that we are getting report that we were not represented. So definitely next time we will attend. I understand it's annual awards. So from the invitation and the program, it looked like it was going to be very prestigious award. So we hope that it went very well. I saw that you invited some of the people in the science space, the former ministers that were in the department, and the current. Yeah, so it was quite a variety of people who attended. But anyhow, thank you very much. So we're going to adjourn members for about... we should be back by 1:30. To take the presentation from Technology Innovation Agency. So 20 minutes is enough to grab something and come back. The meeting is adjourned.